episode of Does Your Favorite Movie Suck? Where we revisit great movies from the 80s and 90s that actually might suck. I'm Kalen Egan.
I'm Travis Sintel.
Today, we're watching Return of the Jedi. And for me, I really honestly feel like we've been building to this for 60 episodes.
Yeah.
This finally I'm not fucking kidding. This justifies our show. This is what the show is supposed to be about. Let's talk about Return of the Jedi.
And with that intro, let's introduce our special guest who has no pressure attached to him now.
Before that, I want to build up to Dan, because here's what I want to say. And this is why, and this is the other thing, and this is going to sound like bullshit. When we started this show, we've talked about this before. We were sitting in the courtyard at that 70s
good
bar.
Good times at Davy Wayne's.
That's right. We were sitting there when we decided we were going to do this thing. And one of the first thoughts I had was, I want to do this because there's going to come a time when I get to invite Dan on the show. And it's probably going to be Return of the Jedi, because the first or second time we ever hung out, Dan, was at another bar called Bigfoot's, maybe Bigfoot West.
Yep.
And he did what I'm going to call, endearingly, a incredible routine where he pitched to me and a couple of other people an incredible alternate version of Return of the Jedi. And it was, I have since tried to replicate that pitch. I heard it once. And I was like so enthralled, and I was like, "He's just pitched me a masterpiece," and this is the greatest non-movie that I've
ever
not existed.
Have you heard the pitch since that night?
No, and I've tried to do it, and every time I do it, people look at me and they're like, "That sucks. I like Return of the Jedi." And I'm like, "No, you just don't like me. I'm fucking it up. This idea is incredible."
Okay.
And so we're not going to do that now.
Kalen never tried to do this to me, so I'm fresh coming into this pitch. I don't know it. I don't know the thing.
Yeah, but as a teaser, after we've seen the film, at some point, Dan, I'm going to call on you to do your routine. I'm calling your routine totally unfairly. But it's also wonderful to have you on.
Who are you?
Let's see. I'm Daniel Thrawn. I write and I direct things, and I do visual effects. And I just worked on Fast and the Furious 8. You might recognize my mountains in the background.
Let's call it by its title, Fate of the Furious.
Fate of the Furious.
Dan,
yes.
Can I tell you, I don't think I've said this on air, but I have said this to Travis. I have a pitch, if you have anybody listening, for the title of Fast and the Furious 10.
Oh, let's hear it.
It's called Fast 10 Your Seatbelt.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
It has to be called that.
You can't compliment me for like 25 minutes on how great the Return of the Jedi pitch is and then lay that boom down on me. That's bad news. People are going to get to the end of the podcast and they're like, yeah, no, I'm not on board.
I really feel like I'm caught in a crossfire of a flirtation right now. I'm sitting between these two men.
I'm just saying the sexual tension is palpable.
It is really aggressive in here all of a sudden.
You also might know Dan's work. He did a beautiful short film, which was set in between Rise of the Planet of the Apes and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which is sort of about one of they did like three movies about the virus or like the spread of the virus. And Dan's is amazing and beautiful and great.
Thank you.
We're stoked to have you. And it's exciting. And I think this, just to set the stage for the conversation, I think this is a ostensibly a podcast about nostalgia, viewed through the lens of old films.
Right.
Kalen's right. There's probably no greater film. And
there
agreed. And we could even localize it to just the original Star Wars trilogy. Of the three original Star Wars, this is the best one for our podcast for reasons that will certainly come out over the course of the conversation. But I guess to open this conversation about our expectations and memories of the film, when have we seen it last and what are our expectations going in?
Kick it off, Dan.
I've been complaining about this movie daily for most of my professional life. But I actually haven't seen it in about 10 years. I'm pretty sure it's been about 10 years.
How accurate do you think your complaints are?
Oh, they're dead on.
Got it. I think that's probably the case.
Just because I haven't watched it doesn't mean it's not playing in a little hate-filled window up in the corner of my vision
constantly,
24/7.
It's your Google glasses or Snapchat glasses.
It's very true.
You're going in totally unbiased.
I'm open to new experiences.
Where did you see it the first time? Do you remember your first experience of the film?
Yeah, no, I was living in Chatham, Massachusetts on Cape Cod, and I saw it at the Chatham Theater, which is like a very it's, you know, it's a small quaint little town with a small quaint little theater, and you know, everyone there is very straight laced, and they've never heard a 12-year-old swear so much.
Yes.
Oh, wow. So wait, at 12,
you knew.
Oh, it was.
You
yeah,
had
it was,
a violent visceral reaction.
It was terrible. Yeah, because the I'd spent the summer watching Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Because they re-released it. Leading up to it.
In the theaters.
In the theaters.
And how many times did you go back and see it?
I must have gone every single night.
That's
one of my, it's still one of my favorite movies of all time. And
that's correct.
Yeah, that is correct.
Yeah.
And my expectations going in were like beyond description. Like yeah. it was like, and I think that this is like, because I've seen plenty of lousy movies, obviously. I've seen, you know, like, you know, I own lousy movies that I've seen many, many times.
Sure.
You know, when you guys were doing Short Circuit 2, I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, I know Short Circuit 2. Yeah.
What is that?
Short Circuit 2 came out okay on our podcast, I would say. Short Circuit 1 went through the ringer.
We kind of like
Short Circuit 2.
Short Circuit
2 is
where it's at.
Yeah. But in a surprising slow burn where I was like, fuck this movie. And then halfway through, I thought, this actually is pretty good.
Yeah, dude. It's the Godfather 2 of Short Circuit movies, for sure.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, if John Cazale had been alive, he would have been. Yeah, no, it's like that. Like, so there's like.
Fisher Stevens almost has the inverse John Cazale career where everything he's in is garbage.
I really,
but he's an okay guy.
I really think at some point we should pinpoint the villain of our podcast, because it's becoming Fisher Stevens.
It's Fisher Stevens, yeah.
It might be, actually.
We just did, which hasn't even aired yet, but we just did Super Mario Brothers, and he's teamed up with Richard Edson as the like
the
goofy,
craziest
henchman.
I can't.
Unwatchable.
I can't. Like, yeah, I'm going to have to imagine. I hope the podcast is really descriptive, because I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to do that.
I don't want to get derailed here, but I recommend watching it.
Oh, man.
That's all I'll say.
That's it.
Okay. I mean that, and you'll hear why or see why.
Okay.
Okay. So you saw it. You went to the theater. You were displeased.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, like, for every bad movie I've seen, I've never been so disappointed by a movie in my entire life. And I think that's the real, like, rating engage. That's like the seismometer of bad movies for me. It's just like how much you're expecting versus how much it delivers. And this went below any reasonable. I thought it was just like, you can't get colder than 0 Kelvin.
Wow.
It's probably impossible.
You absolutely
just
figured
it out.
Yeah, it is Return of the Jedi.
Oh, it is the opposite of what I wanted from that film. And I'll talk about it later. But
so
it's just
upon
like,
rewatch, is that, did you sort of soften on it in any way? Or did you, because I mean, did you continue to crystallize that hate, or like what?
Yeah, well, I would definitely say it sharpened. But like, I can't say that like it hasn't brought me like years and years and years of joy in bitching about it. It's become like,
That's new territory for this show. It's just the joy of loathing something.
I get that. I'm excited to dig into that.
Like, and I'm so easy on so many movies. I mean, like, I've seen like, you know, like bad Dennis Quaid movies multiple times. And I'm like, no, it's all right. It's okay. And we were talking about Daryl the other day. Have you guys done Daryl?
Sure. We haven't done it yet.
Oh, dude, I saw Daryl in the theater 3 times.
Well, by the way, I just want to say that this extends beyond the nostalgic, because one of my favorite things in the world, and we always spend far too long before doing this again, is getting together with Dan and going through a catalog of the movies that like we kind of liked. And it's what I love is it's not every time, but they kind of match up. Like I remember being excited like maybe two hangouts ago to sit down with Dan and be like, hey, you know what I kind of liked? Spectre. And he was like, I'm in. Like, I'm down.
Oh, yeah.
It's fucking great.
It's true, man. It's true.
And so same for Batman versus Superman. Like these movies that are sort of...
Yep. Kalen deep dove on that one.
I can't get enough.
Yeah, dude. No, I'm on.
Okay, wait. So back to Return of the Jedi.
Right.
Before we move on to Kalen, because I'm very curious about this too. I don't know the... Kalen and I keep stiff upper lips and sort of keep our cards close to the vest about... these films prior to viewing them or recording. So we actually haven't talked about it. But one of the things that we run into in our podcast a lot is that our expectation of a thing colors our enjoyment of the thing. Mm-hmm. That is the theme of the podcast. You have just sort of nailed that pretty hard. How much of that do you think colors your ability to look objectively? Is it that you see what the potential could be and that fucks it all up for you? Or is it a separate track of like, also objectively, it's has problems.
Yeah, no, because I feel like I'm relatively, because like I was I have to give Return of the Jedi credit because, like, it also saved me at the same time from being a super Star Wars nerd. Like, it's so...
That's interesting.
Yeah, like, I mean, it, like, I can't imagine, like... pretending to enjoy this stuff for 30 something years. Yeah.
You could have been a different man.
Oh, it would have been, yeah. I mean, like, if this movie hadn't been terrible, I would have, like, I would have made all sorts of apologies for all the terrible movies that came after it.
Right.
But now I was just like, yeah, of course the new one sucked or whatever. But it's like, it, you know, it sucked for a long time and it's not a surprise. And I was able to go fall in love with other films and see other people and do this kind of stuff. So it's like, it's good that it did this, but like,
you're walking down the aisle toward the wedding ceremony of Star Wars and then graduate style running from
bang. He had his heart broken at the right age. So they had functional, healthy relationships the rest of his life.
Because like Star Wars definitely changed the course of my, you know, of my childhood, as did for everybody who saw it. But it's like, I can now look at Star Wars and go, okay, there's goods and bads about this movie, you know, like it's not a flawless movie. It's a really, really good adventure film. That kind of bags out in the second act and totally gets it together for the third act. And, like, it's a solid movie. And I really, really enjoy that, like, now you can see it as this sort of, like, very deeply 70s movie. Like, it really has this, like, there's, you know, there's almost two halves of it where it's, like, you have the rebels are these indie filmmakers shooting out in the desert with crappy cameras and all in natural light. And then the bad guys are all in Elstree Studios, and they all have costumes on. You know, it's all from central casting, and that's really sort of symbolic of the larger thing that was happening in the '70s with Lucas and all of his pals. And so you can go like, "That's a really interesting movie, fantastic." Empire Strikes Back remains incredible. Like every time I see it, I'm like, "This is like outside of Star Wars." Like if I had only ever seen this movie, I would have been blown away. And now, like, now that I write and all this stuff, I can look at this and say, like, there is a, there's an incredible simplicity and complexity to this movie, to Empire Strikes Back, that I don't think has been replicated. Like, I think that it the reason why we have the nostalgia we do across the board for nerddom is because of Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, wow.
Because, like, Star Wars was a big deal. But if Star Wars 2 came out and it was, like, a shitty Planet of the Apes film, you know, it was like, is that the one that go back in time? And they have $10. Like, if it was one of those, it would have been forgotten about. But Empire Strikes Back was, like, nothing anyone had seen
before. It in the culture.
Right, and became, after that, like, so propulsive to be a nerd and to be into all this stuff, that we live today in the culture that was created, because, like, you know, all of us are 30s or 40s now, and we're making all the stuff, like, we are creating the stuff that we're replicating from that time period, and that is directly the result of Empire Strikes Back.
Wow. Well, I mean, generationally, I think that we're slightly set. I mean, I'm gonna segue to talk about me off of that incredible description of the Star Wars trilogy.
I have one more question before you say.
Okay, go for it.
Yeah. Do you in some way then credit Return of the Jedi with helping you develop your aesthetic or your taste?
Oh, absolutely.
You're 12. So do you think,
yeah,
was it the first thing where you sort of felt yourself applying cognitive taste to a art project?
Yeah, because it was so starkly.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a sheer.
I mean, do you have that moment of I have a moment of understanding what I like and what I don't like in a stark way like that? I don't have that.
I don't know that I have a parallel in terms of disappointment, in terms of that being the thing that triggered objectivity, let's say, as opposed to just blind love. I mean, I'm sure that there are things that came out that happened to, but my sort of origin stories are more about something I didn't see coming that pushed me in a different direction. I mean, you know, the two that jarred me, I've talked about this so many times, and it's boring, I'm sure, to anybody who listens to this, but when I was 5 years old, I saw Who Framed Roger Rabbit and thought, okay, that is objectively impossible. Therefore, somebody must be making this. Was the first time that thought had ever occurred.
Right.
And then when I was 11 and saw Pulp Fiction, the same thing happened, where I was like, I cannot believe that this was put in theaters and somebody made it, and I have to understand it and I have to crack it open. And so that was a different, but those were not disappointments. And I can't think of anything quite on the level of Return of the Jedi. And I didn't really have that relationship to Star Wars. Effects, I, you know, I, oddly, because I'm talking about Roger Rabbit, was not the thing that blew my mind. And sort of unseen worlds was not the thing that really captured my interest. Even as a kid, I remember I was an Indiana Jones guy. I liked that better. And because I liked sort of the characters and adventures and interactivity with weird history. But a lot of my friends were Star Wars people. And I had a kind of glancing, I knew them intimately, I knew them very, very well, but my familiarity was different. And it was not really, I was not that full of awe for Star Wars. And eventually, as time went on, wound up appreciating Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back in a less sort of head over heels fanboy kind of a way. Right. As like just great, awesome right. movies. And I got really interested in George Lucas as a thinker, as a filmmaker, as a visionary.
Yeah, and you and I, now I'm going to bitch a lot about this movie, but you and I have definitely talked about Lucas before. My respect for Lucas is enormous. Yeah. Like, I love that dude, and I think he's done so much for film. It's sort of ridiculous that he's totally. Thought of it. Like, everyone thinks about him, oh, George, you messed up. I'm just like, you wouldn't have anything you have today without this dude.
And I mean, I don't, what I was going to say later, but I'll say now, is, and I think that we would, if I know Travis well, and I know Dan well enough, that this is not, I don't want to make this a psychoanalysis of George Lucas. Mm-hmm. But Return of the Jedi is clearly him making a choice that I'm going to create an industry rather than close a film trilogy. And right. he's going to go for the commercialization of something and the safety of familiarity mm-hmm. rather than do the hard, you know, close, you right. know, on this thing. And that has bore fruit for film. I mean, like the sort of what is the artistic in some ways, perhaps the artistic failure of Return of the Jedi led to the triumph of ILM and all this sort of the development of technology that he went on to do. And at the same time, watching George Lucas as a man scramble for artistic integrity has been totally fascinating.
Yeah.
All of that said, I don't really want to talk about that. And one of the things that I want to sort of pose to us as three is we have options here. When we say we're going to sit down and watch Return of the Jedi, that can mean a lot of different things.
Caleb and I have already started to hash this out a little bit.
we haven't settled on anything.
No. Right.
And, okay, you know, there's a zillion now versions of Return of the Jedi. And the last time I saw the movie in whole... Mm-hmm. Was probably the special edition, the first theatrical release special edition.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And I've since seen it like in college in segments on, you know, I think that we thought it was fun and cool to get the laser discs and watch the laser disc versions, which were essentially the original version of Return of the Jedi. But I haven't really watched it since then because sort of for some sort of involuntary revulsive reason, I don't really want to watch what I would call like fake Star Wars, like my new shitty Star Wars. Right. On any of them. This doesn't apply to Return of the Jedi exclusively. Like I haven't seen any Star Wars in at least 10 years. Like
wow.
at least.
Wow.
And it's because I didn't really want to watch what was available on DVD and Blu-ray. Right. However, we have those. And so we could watch the newest cut of Return of the Jedi, or we can watch this recompiled despecialized edition of Return of the Jedi.
Right, we did some homework to prepare for this
exciting.
Podcast.
Yeah,
Kayla and I were loosely texting about this, talking about some of the options we should at least prepare to have on hand based on how this conversation went. I was not wholly ironically pushing for the Hayden Christensen flashback version, just because, and it does relate to George Lucas, this idea of an artist controlling its art once it's been released and trying to be obsessive about what people have access to right. is very interesting to me.
Yeah.
I really like the idea. I don't want to go back into George Lucas, but there's something to be said about, well, here's what we settled on after 20 years of 30 years of rigmarole. Here's the thing that it finally is. There's something to that interests me. I'm also interested in the first.
That's
first version.
It's very interesting. Yeah, and like, there's no way not to, I mean, we can sort of say there's the loose parameters where we want to talk about Return of the Jedi, the film that originally came out, perhaps, but you can't not talk about what he did after that and where we're at with it right now. So I don't know what the answer is. And maybe because you're the guest, you know, Dan, I would throw it to you. Like what do you want to watch today?
Well, I mean, I definitely, I agree that like as you know, as my feelings it's like my feelings have evolved for this movie in the most negative way. But the movie has also evolved along with it, and part of like it's talking about what is wrong with that movie is tied into all of the bad decisions that have been made since. And so I think like watching the latest version is probably the right thing to do, because like that thing, he not only made mistakes, he then doubled down on those mistakes and then doubled down on doubling down.
Just driving
the nail even further into the coffin the entire time.
Let me ask you this, and I want to play devil's advocate on this, and don't take this as me driving you in one direction.
Kellen does a lot of hypothetical questions that have right and wrong answers.
Yeah, so don't get this wrong.
Hypothetical question.
And you're out.
Do you feel like, so you haven't seen, is if you haven't seen it in 10 years, you have not seen the latest cut.
Right.
Full disclosure, I don't know if I have that. I have the late 90s special edition DVD box set here. I don't know
late 90s?
Yeah, there's one that came out. You open up that cabinet. I'm not sure that I don't think, other side, right side. Right. The one you were doing. Yeah.
The one that you're talking about is the latest version has Hayden Christensen showing up in the on flash. The log.
That's right.
Like with Yoda.
And I have seen it. Right. I don't know if that's the one that has it.
Oh, weird. So so we're talking about a mid version.
A
mid version.
Oh, yeah.
When we were talking via text, I was thinking maybe we should get that one. While Kaylin's doing research on that, I will tell you, I have seen this movie last year. Mm-hmm. My current girlfriend had not seen any of the Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And this is, talking to a lot of men my age, this seems to be a rite of passage for a lot of people of like, your girlfriend hasn't seen Star Wars and you go through this thing. And I've had four or five conversations with the same person. And you talk about, do you watch all six in machete order? What do you do? Like, what order do you show them to the men? And I was like, we're doing 4, 5, 6 and we'll see how it lands. Right.
Dan, is there any part of you that thinks that you might watch whatever version of Return of the Jedi and come away with a totally different sort of appreciation or point of view?
And then I'll finish the story I was halfway through.
Okay, hang on.
I'm sorry. I didn't know. Okay. Yeah, that's right. I was looking at the box.
Like, halfway through.
That's all right. Here we go.
But we'll come back to it. It's fine.
It's the way.
I think what's going to happen is that I'm going to remember all the things that I forgot to complain about the past decade.
That actually really excites me. I hope that your complaints are super nuanced and micro, and you have like, nothing to say about the macro problems.
I talked about this. I really would, if I just had a year to do it, I would spend every day of that year writing my complaints for a one page per scene for the entire film.
Wait for the back half. It'll
be this Neal Stephenson length.
Yes, I really do think we should prepare ourselves for a pretty big journey on this podcast of it being a long one. Sorry, I was gonna say no, it's okay. I was gonna say that there was this interview Jon Stewart did with George Lucas, and he told George Lucas to his face, because my kids are old enough now that I'm showing them all the Star Wars. And I asked my son which of the Star Wars he likes the best, and he said Star Wars 1, and I told my son that you're wrong. And George Lucas looked red-faced, didn't really laugh at that, but the audience laughed, whatever. So we finished the first original trilogy, and I'm like, I have a lot to say about this. Let's decompress. I had, you know, I'm sure all of us did, but I had the Millennium Falcon as a kid. I had the Ewok Village. I had all the action figures. Super Star Trek buff, predominantly. Next tier down obsession with Star Wars for me. Right. Grew up with that, and then third tier Doctor Who. So I was across the board in a nerd sci-fi family. Right. We read Anne McCaffrey. Excellent. We read Terry Pratchett. This is the house I grew up in.
Yeah.
So it's important to me. And so I was like, you have to watch Star Wars. You have to be part of the cultural conversation on this. It's a necessity to be a human being.
Of course,
you watch
it goes that time.
So we did the whole thing. And at the end, I'm like, what did you like? What did you hate? Let's talk about Star Wars. And she's like, I really like the Ewoks. And I thought, we're in trouble town.
This
now.
Is, oh no.
But, this is going to be a long conversation. So I don't want to go into like the rest of how that conversation went, but I do want to say that it was an insight into how George Lucas's genius worked, that there is an appeal to certain people. And the effect a lot of us had was feeling like, oh, this is no longer just for me. This is for someone else.
Right.
And that, I think, is part of nostalgia that really gets us, is that when Ewoks start throwing rocks at stormtroopers, you start to get the feeling, well, you have it before that moment, but like you go, oh, this is not in a movie that I'm in anymore that's for me. Whereas Empire Strikes Back, you're like, this is for me. This is speaking. This is the thing I like. I'm in this situation.
Right. I totally get where you're coming from.
Yeah. So I think that's something to think about too, is the pivot that sort of Kaylin alluded to a little bit, the choice that George Lucas was making, was not just all the things that you said, but it was a little bit, I would imagine, a particular intentional choice to move into a slightly broader audience with slightly larger fiduciary rewards.
Well, and yes, and it's all, again, I know I said we're not going to do this, and then here I am, I'm the one who's doing it.
I but keep like, bringing you back into it. It's my fault.
No, well, but I'm putting this parameter on the conversation because I know I'm going to slide into it, and I really want to try to stop myself from going here, but I am so interested in not only the fiduciary thing and the commercialization of Star Wars thing, but the self-loathing that he seems to occasionally exhibit for Star Wars. And part of that is exhibit is by him saying this is a movie, this was always a film for 12-year-olds.
Which is not true.
It's not true at all.
But you see that shift starting to happen here.
And that's interesting to me. And the thing is that like there are movies for 12-year-olds that are far more emotionally affecting than the choices he made. Like
the Hug-a-Bunch.
Yeah. For instance, obviously. I mean, he beat me to the punch on this, but I mean like for instance, like the third Harry Potter movie, which I slogged through the first two Harry Potter movies. I was just like, oh, I don't know if I can. I barely made it across the finish line. They're throwing like Kool-Aid in my face. I was just like, all right,
You need better friends. Who's throwing Kool-Aid at your face? That's a different problem we should talk about.
Yeah, that happens in my house all the time. It's not a big deal. But the but by the time I watched that, the end of that movie, like I got completely choked up.
Oh yeah.
In because it's a good movie, like that's the only reason. And like the so like with Star Wars, it's like the there I totally understand the sort of like you know, like it's for a new audience. Absolutely, every movie that comes out is for its new audience, and I think that every movie needs to be responsible to itself to be good,
right?
You know, and that's why I was able to say like I will never watch the next, you know, maybe other Harry Potters I will watch. I will never watch the first two again, but I will always recommend the third one because that's a very good film, regardless if I ever experience the rest of it.
Yeah.
And like with Return of the Jedi, I think that there's an interesting idea in that, like, which should you be responsible to? Is like, should we be responsible to what we've already done, or should we be responsible to the art we're trying to practice now?
It's hard not to draw a straight line from that question to the superhero dynasty that we're in currently. Right. And you alluded to this earlier, but it really is. And it's not Empire necessarily. It's this one, I think, that starts where we're at in terms of having new Star Wars every year, in terms of having a Marvel superhero universe that has two movies coming out every year. Mm-hmm. This is really, I think, where it starts. And I think it's a bit of, and you know, George Lucas is not a seer. He didn't necessarily predict all these things coming, but it feels like an intentional segue to that world. And it's had an enormous impact on how we consume media and film.
Completely agreed. And the thing is, like, what I mean when I say, like, Empire Strikes Back started everything, it's not that, like, Empire Strikes Back, I mean, for you, for instance, you're more of a Raiders guy, right?
Totally.
But, like, Raiders doesn't happen without Star Wars and Empire.
Totally.
You know? And Empire is like the greatness and quality of Empire, and the sort of like, we'll get into this later, the spirituality
I
of
completely
that movie,
agree with this, by the way,
are so honest and so real that they affected literally everybody who saw it. And so when you see Return of the Jedi, which is a false movie, it's a fake movie, like, I completely agree that that's the movie that made the decision of like, this is now for the making of the money. Like, and it's true for everything across the board, nerd style, which is definitely going on right now.
Nerd style is my least favorite martial art.
And it's interesting to see Disney go through this process of trying to rebuild the Star Wars brand via nostalgia at first. Yeah. And then via, you know, like, they're going, like, how do we tell good stories and make good movies now? Because I'll, you know, not to digress into something else, but I didn't like Force Awakens whatsoever.
Don't get me started. Kalen knows this. I have hours of complaints about Force Awakens.
It's an extremely well-made advertisement for the product of Star Wars.
I don't even think it's that well-made of an advertisement.
It is the worst aspect of nostalgia, which is like, there isn't anything new in it at all.
Yeah.
And it's using pictures of things that evoke memories of me experiencing good things to play itself off as a story.
Just so you know how much I hate it, I agree with all of that, and it's my last complaint about the film.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
And whereas, like, Rogue One is, for me, a much better movie, a much more entertaining movie. And but they're still, now they're in a different kind of trap where they can't tell good stories that are new stories. You can either have new and non-story, or wedged in between the cracks of other real stories. And I was like, Rogue One's a great little war film. That's totally fun. And I really enjoyed myself. And it comes close to being like what I remember being excited about with Star Wars.
Yeah.
But because it is a product, Return of the Jedi style, like, you can't make a movie when you decide to make a product like that.
No, and you see it constantly capitulating, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
So, all of that said, let's just decide offline. I mean, I think that we may watch this mid-tier version, although let's talk about
it. We'll have a more uninteresting conversation off-air about this.
Yeah.
So, you expect to hate it.
Mm-hmm.
Kaelin, you expect to find... expect to find some value in it.
I would like to try to find a value.
Yeah.
The most recent Star Wars films I've seen are Rogue One and Force Awakens. Right. I just saw Rogue One, a couple of weeks ago for the first time. I didn't want to go see it in the theater, and I rented it, and had a very similar reaction to you, actually, which is like, oh, this is actually, like, entertaining. There's good assets. This is well-directed. There's
pretty
cool
good little
shit
movie.
In here. Yeah. Yeah. And I was very surprised by that. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if... You know, my last memory of Return of the Jedi is you pitching a different Return of the Jedi. Yeah. And so that's like the most recent memory I have of it.
Right.
And so I want to go watch it and try to be as objective as possible and have that feeling of I'm just walking into this movie and I would like to see what it's
I've
like.
Seen it very recently. So my experience of watching this will be watching the two of you. And I'm very excited about that. And I really can't wait to see Excellent. How you guys react. We'll be back after watching Return of the Jedi.
Victims of the almighty Sarlacc, His Excellency hopes that you will die honorably. But should any of you wish to beg for mercy, the great Jabba the Hutt will now listen to your pleas.
Jedi.
3PO, you tell that slimy piece of worm-ridden filth he'll get no such pleasure from us, right?
Jabba, this is your last chance. Free us or die.
Sabuka's here.
I want to name a fear that I have.
Okay.
First of all, I'm concerned that our listeners will think that what I'm about to do is sort of servicing, Dan here, like that I am sort of like, persuaded by his preamble about, being very disappointed by this film. And that now I'm sort of feeding into, or I'm falling into a trap, which is that, he's sort of set up the tone of this conversation, and now I'm about to, like, capitulate to sort of Dan's point of view on this movie.
If I had been excited about this movie, how would you feel?
Don't be scared of the fans.
I spent most of this movie confirming to myself that I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
I haven't felt this sick and sad during a movie in as long as since like Force Awakens, like when I had the exact same feeling sitting here on your couch watching this movie that I had sitting in the theater during Force Awakens, which is a sinking ill sadness. And I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan, and there is a certain power in this series to just fucking crush you, and I don't know what that is.
I hate Force Awakens, but I will say at least the individual sequences work and are infused with some sort of energy. So I'll give it that. Compared
to
this,
this movie so here's, much.
Yeah, here's all I have to say, I will then sort of abscond from the microphone and let you guys trash this thing.
I am stunned.
I know, but let me just say this one. I literally only have one thing to say, which is. When you are showing a significant other a film trilogy that you want them to like, and this is the last part of it, you find yourself looking at it.
All right, honey, this is what we've been building up to.
I know. Okay, we're here.
Octopussy.
I made you sit through all this to get here. I've had now two very different experiences. One was desperately nudging with my elbow, being like, isn't this fun? Aren't we having a good time? Aren't you not mad at me for making you watch this? So I had that experience last year, which was like, please like this. And like, this is so great, right? And coming into it with that angle of not wanting to acknowledge any moment of like, this is really terrible.
Yeah.
And then having this experience, which was as best as I could offer an honest appraisal, which quickly gave way to sinking disgust.
Yes.
So the way you come into the film really, really affects what you're looking for and what you get out of it. But this was anyway. I'll turn the mic over because I agree with what everything you're about to say.
I mean, it's Dan. I'll sort of unleash you and let you go. But like, I would say this is a miracle of a film because it never starts and it never ends
at all.
You're
ever,
just stuck.
Ever.
And like, I couldn't tell where it happened, where I was like, when's this fucking thing going to get going? And then I was like, when will this fucking thing end?
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't tell the difference.
Yeah. It's really, I mean, like there's, cause I have to say that I like when it started up, I was like, I started to feel the nostalgia kick in because I haven't felt, I just haven't watched it in so long. I was like, you know what? Maybe this isn't, I've been riding this horse for a long time. And I feel a little bit bad about me.
I got saddle sores.
It's like, yeah, this is like, here we go. You know, no, it's not. What the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
What is happening?
Yeah. It's
like when we were spending, like, it was like a half an hour into the Jabba the Hutt on the sail barge sequence. And I was like, this is interminable. I was
and
just
like,
no,
I don't
know what's happening.
Yeah, just for listeners, and in fact, I'll nominate you, Dan, to give the plot of the film as best as you can do, because we always do this for the podcast. But the opening, quote-unquote, sequence takes about 45 minutes.
Yeah, no. It's,
and there's but in a complete, there's no relation to the rest of the plot of the film. It's just an opening sort of set piece-ish thing that happens. For
and it takes minutes. Forever to get to the set piece portion of the set
piece. Yeah, it's really weird. Okay, so what's the plot of Return of the Jedi here?
Like,
yeah,
so, what? Like, the, you have, oh, God, let's say, it starts with the, with Darth Vader saying, how's the Death Star coming together? In a big portentous scene. The guy's like, it's not done yet.
He's like, Death Star, you say?
Yeah, no, we got a
interesting,
totally got a new one.
Mm.
So
the
anyway,
the
so
unfinished Death Star, which is finished, but in its unfinished state, has vulnerabilities.
Yes, which is magnificent.
Is the Death Star threatening anything that has a sort of ticking clock? Or is there a reason they have to destroy it now?
Well, I mean, they definitely make it, man. Like they do this in the opening crawl. They like they make the opening crawl about the new Death Star.
Okay. Okay.
Like they don't even want
to... it's. But can sure. I say it's almost a gag? Like they say, like they having destroyed the old Death Star, they've got a new weapon. And then the opening shot is pan down the Death Star.
Yeah. That stunned me.
It's almost a gag.
Yeah.
What do you think of this?
It was funny because we tried, full disclosure, we tried for about 30 minutes to not talk during the film. I said, when the opening shot came up, I just said, I can't believe it. And Kayla went, shh.
No, and save
then,
it, save
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and then for 30 minutes, we were, I think, really well behaved, and then we sort of unleashed ourselves a little bit, full disclosure.
I know that I've implied this before, you know, just a few minutes ago here, but I am so, I really honestly, I want to report that I feel physically nauseous by this movie. Like, I feel, it really makes me feel sick.
Did you feel like I did? Like, I felt bad for everybody involved.
Absolutely.
Like, it's really, really awkward the entire time.
Awkward is a really great word. And, like, I know that you've barely gotten into the plot, but while we're talking about Jabba's palace.
You may as well finish the plot, though.
But I just very quickly, like, everything is wrong. Everything is wrong about how they put that sequence together. I mean, it's a fine idea. It's a cool Star Wars idea.
A lot of the ideas actually are fun.
Who's basically a gangster who runs a weird brothel hangout spot,
right?
Which
this is the culmination of Han Solo's story, right? Mm-hmm. And that like that's like
yeah,
been
you've
going
been
on. This has been alluded to for two movies.
Exactly.
This is the backstory,
and yet it's a terrible set.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's even an okay set. It's horribly shot.
Yeah.
The way that people congregate in it, it feels and that you spend so long in a place that must have taken up a tiny state. I mean, like, I know it's like I'm getting like into a minutia thing, but I was like, looking at this movie being like, what am I supposed to get from this? What am I looking at? What is this space supposed to be?
Why are we here
for so goddamn long?
Did you ever see Sex and the City 2?
No. No.
It produces exactly the same effect where you're like, a bunch of completely incompetent people have been given an enormous amount of money.
Yeah.
And like at first it's like, oh, they're throwing a party. They're buying lots of stuff. And then it goes on for a while and you're like, no one should have given them this money. This is really weird and embarrassing. They're weird and embarrassed. Well, it gets more and more awkward.
But what's very confusing about the movie, the entire movie, but particularly this first sequence, since we're talking about it, is like, I kept looking at it being like, hey, this is Star Wars. Where'd the money go? Like, where's
the
cash?
Really
like,
cheap.
Jabba looks kind of good,
yeah,
but this place sucks.
Yeah, it's this
and
bunchy, cramped,
badly shot.
Yeah,
it's terrible.
And it's tiny. It feels really little, and they're not exploiting that.
The photography is so terrible. You can't tell what, like, the staging is just not...
Yeah.
Like, you can't tell what people are doing, where they are.
Not at
anything.
All.
Every
Not
shot
at
is
all.
An individual thing that's happening.
I know. And I was really like, and then as the movie went on and that kept happening,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Every set and sequence was confined to these tiny little rooms.
Right.
Like, even like what I thought in my head was like, well, at least we have this spectacular finale where fucking Luke fights Vader in this gorgeous place. That place sucks.
No, it's
that place is terrible.
Yeah, it looks like a Star Wars booth at Comic-Con.
The whole thing felt, and I said this during, I'm sorry, I know, and I'm getting so fucking carried away, and Dan, you should finish the story, but I kept thinking
you
like...
You should start the story.
Yes. Well, it never starts.
Just
yeah.
like...
Nor will it ever end.
Yeah, she get to where it's
But like. I kept thinking like, this is, I said this during the movie, this feels like where they got the aesthetic for video game cutscenes, which
yeah,
is like,
right.
There's no money, but we have to kind of emulate the feeling you would have watching a film.
Right.
But we also have the lag of video game load. Like, all this, like, weird...
Yeah, strange pauses.
Yes,
the weird
exactly.
edits. Yeah,
the
yeah,
whole
yeah.
movie felt like that. Yeah, and I got really ill watching it.
Well,
the
I mean,
pace
because
of
like,
it was go, wrong.
Like we called it during the movie. Like, the movie... like, there are at least three starts to this film.
Mm-hmm.
And I could feel like they were must have been sitting around talking about, like... What are a bunch of good ideas about? Like, how can we? What would be a great opening gag?
Yeah.
You know, and like, and I almost feel like they're just like, okay, so, this weird triangular ship flies and lands on something. Go.
Yeah.
And they point at like three different people.
Yeah.
Because like that's the one like chapter heading for all the beginnings of the movie. It's just like, and the triangular ship lands and something boring is set up and nothing happens again. Like, but it's really strange because like they spend an enormous amount of time getting Han back from Jabba the Hutt to, you know, like nothing outside of getting Han back. That's nothing happens.
What's crazy is
killing
that
time.
Here's what's so frustrating, and I know everyone in the room knows this, but if that's a 7-minute heist scene of getting Han out and killing Jabba the Hutt,
Mission
we're
Impossible,
into a great
Millie
fucking
Millie
movie.
And you're on. Yeah.
It's so easy to do.
Yeah.
It's so obviously easy to do, which drives me crazy, is that it's not a necessarily complicated thing. It's
right.
just you've made your own problem.
No, you know, that's the thing. The movie tells you right away, yo, we got nothing. Like, we are going to waste your 40 minutes of your time because this is all we got, folks. Like,
because if you were to add up all of the Jabba the Hutt storyline from all of the movies and just said, like, put every time he's mentioned, talked about, whatever, and packed it side by side and watched all of it, it would be 50 minutes long. And the first 45 minutes would be the first 2 minutes.
And 45 minutes would be Return of the Jedi.
Like, it's really stunning.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so, like, they get to Jabba's sail bars. They get Han. Nothing has changed at all. Like, they just get Han. Sort of like they fix the problem of Han's not on board. Like that. Like the screenwriter is looking at this and saying like, okay, well, we have to have fun with Han, Luke, and Leia, but we need to get Han back. So
you know what's
let's
crazy?
Get Han back, and then we can start the movie.
Even in movies where lots of movies have to assemble your team before you start the film. Example: Blues Brothers. We just watched it. Even movies where you start from scratch with no team members and assemble a team of 10, it takes less time than it does rescuing Han.
Oh my god, man.
And there's like, I mean, if you look at like Ocean's 11 or something like that.
I was going to say that.
The movie is
great
made
example.
Up of the flavor of bringing the team
the
together.
Obviousness
the obviousness
of the joy of bringing your heroes together is
Lost.
Blown in the worst. And like a truly unbelievable way. Like, I don't know how they failed this hard.
It's really
And like, my instinct is somebody decided to fuck up Star Wars.
Yeah,
somebody
yeah.
was like, you
yeah.
know what would be cool? Fuck you, Star Wars. Yeah. And now we're gonna just screw with everybody. Because that's really honestly how it felt watching this film. It's like, somebody's fucking with me. Like, I came to see Star Wars and they hate me. And I don't really believe that, but it's how it feels.
But it's sort of actually the case, right? I mean, that's like actually what's happening. Because, because I know you don't want to spend too much time.
I said I wasn't going to.
But it's just like, Lucas, no, I don't know the full story here. I only know, everyone only knows hearsay about it. But it's like, Lucas was having some tough times, you know, just interpersonally.
Well, you know, what's funny, and I'm sorry, I know kind of where you're going, but it's like, he is on record as saying, like, Temple of Doom came out at a bad time in my life.
Yeah, exactly.
This is 1 year before that.
Yeah, exactly.
He was having a bad time.
This was the bad, you know, like, this is like in the middle of the bad time.
Yeah.
Temple of Doom, which is not a great movie, but Temple of Doom has an emotion behind it.
Yeah.
And it's hate. Like, yes. It is pure angry hate.
Yes.
But
yes.
It provides the story for the dramatic push for the entire movie.
Totally.
And like, you come out of there, like, you're like, it's traumatized. Temple of Doom is a traumatizing movie.
It is so brutal. I totally agree.
Shook today. Yes. You're like, holy fuck.
It is emotionally mean. Yeah. And I've really come to love that about it. It's a really honest record of pain and rage.
It is a cruel, mean-spirited film.
Yes.
Like, that is a movie that's a piece of art that you make off of, experiencing whatever he was experiencing while this disaster was going on.
Yeah.
This thing is like he's either not present or he's so embittered by the situation that he is saying, fuck you.
Fuck it.
Yeah. Fuck you to everybody.
Yeah.
Like, you want Star Wars here.
In mind, given our introduction about cash grabs and pivoting to something different, do you still feel that's true? I think it's true in a conceptual phase. I don't think it's true the way I thought of an execution phase.
No. I don't know how to do this because I accidentally set up a stipulation, which is that we can't talk about, I don't want to talk about George Lucas.
Who cares?
Ultimately, that's all I'm going to talk about because this is not the movie I thought we were going to watch.
Yeah,
I really thought we were going to watch a blatant, like, you know, we have to shift into responsibility. And I found this movie to be not responsible. I found it to be sick and unpleasant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, it's an ugly, like, unfocused, like fake, like, you're talking, like someone's trying to put on a false front of being happy.
Yeah.
Well, they're actually really depressed.
Yeah. But even the actors are doing that, which is absolutely really confusing because the performances are what you described. And I can't imagine everyone involved in the film is in the same emotional state.
But you can see that Hamill is really invested in, like, this is his thing, right?
Yeah. You're right.
And he's really trying to make it work. But, like, he has to pitch it at this sort of weird Shakespearean tone just to make this.
Well, because the language is
attempted, so awkward, Shakespeare. Right?
Well, they've given him nothing. Yeah, they've given him nothing to build from. Right. I mean, they've set up an extraordinary potential character.
Right.
And then they've said, all that shit happened. Now you're just this guy.
This is really interesting. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We cut around all the good stuff.
Yeah, from when I complain about this, like, the key flaw in the movie, like, the thing that is the first domino in the series of why this movie is so terrible, is that Empire Strikes Back spends its entire running time ruining Luke. Mm-hmm. Like, it's about breaking Luke in half. And then at the top of this,
he's fine.
Like, he's totally fine.
Yeah. Well, they cut around the fun stuff.
Yeah, and because of that, like, every other character is an extension of Luke's story. Mm-hmm. And because Luke is fixed, nobody has anything to do.
Yeah.
Like, that's literally what's going on. And I think that, like, when you bring up, like, Lucas and, like, his divorce and everything else that's going on for him, he doesn't want to do the emotional work of going through that character.
Yeah.
Like, he just doesn't want to do it. So he's just like, I don't want to fucking go through that.
Yeah.
He's fine. He's a fucking master. How about that? He has all the toy rights too, bitch. That's what the movie says.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I've totally got it. And so does Yoda says so.
He's all
so
powerful. Let's do this.
That's
it. And he's never scared or in danger.
He's never, and in fact, he's really he's really flip and arrogant,
yeah,
and unpleasant. Like, yeah. I mean, just to well, Jabba.
You know what? It's interesting. It's like everything that I. It's as if he is saying everything I believed about the hero's journey and the redemption and the sort of complicating factors of success and right. triumph. I, you know what? I'm over it, man. Like, yeah, life sucks.
It's meaningless. It's
life
meaningless.
Kind of blows.
Yeah, because you're right. This is a meaningless film. There yeah, is no, there's absolutely. No soul. There's no meaning. There's nothing in the movie.
You want an
saying.
Ending? Fine. Here's a fucking ending.
Yeah.
Okay, finish the plot. And then right. At some point, I want to hear your alternate pitch. But let's go. Let's do the plot.
Wait to hear it. That is the only thing that's going to get me out of this fucking
movie. Otherwise, we're going to sit here and drink ourselves.
Yeah, it's so sad. It's ridiculous. But I mean, like, you start the movie with a crawl, as we were saying, like the opening text crawl is Death Star centric instead of character centric, which is really interesting. Mm-hmm. It's just like,
I know,
you know, it's just like, and there's this terrible thing, but I mean, like, it's advertising, it's like trying to, and like the whole movie is constantly trying to say how awesome what's coming is.
And also,
when they know it's not awesome, they know they're cheaping out.
Keep in mind, too, the end of the last film leaves our characters in dramatic peril. Luke has lost his hand, and we see he's got a robot hand. Han Solo is in carbonite.
Yeah.
The rebellion's in disarray. And then the opening crawl of the film, we've been waiting for 2 to 3 years to see, says, there's a new Death Star.
The craziest thing is that, and you guys pointed this out when it was on screen, but like the movie almost tells you by the opening crawl and the first scene, okay, the star of this movie is Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like it tells you the star of the movie is the Empire.
Right.
And we're going to get to those other fucking assholes, but like this movie is going to be all about Vader and redoing the Star Wars story from a different point of view. You open on the bad guys.
Yeah.
And they're kind of your focal point.
Right.
I mean, while all this other boring business is going on.
Like, so I mean, you would get, like, just to keep on pushing the metaphor as far as we can.
Yeah.
Like, Vader is, like, Lucas is identifying with Vader.
Yeah.
Right. Mm. And he is building this sort of mimic version of the power of the original film.
Totally.
Like, that's like, this is what he's doing. And he's coming in to check on it, and everyone's given a bunch of fucking hassle because it's not moving fast enough. this is the point of view, this is the angle he's coming at, and what he desperately needs in the movie, for no reason connected to the story at all, is forgiveness.
Yeah.
Like, he suddenly it's a Darth Vader needs forgiveness story.
Yes.
Yeah, redemption of the Empire.
Totally right.
Redemption of the Empire.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with anything we've been seeing before.
Yeah.
And now suddenly this is what it's all about.
Yeah. Yeah. And, well, this is where everything goes horribly, horribly wrong for Star Wars as an idea, which is when he starts to identify with Vader. I mean, it happens right here. Yep. It's like you see it at the beginning of Return of the Jedi. Whatever happened between, for Lucas or anybody, between Empire and Jedi is fucking, you know, identification is transferred.
It was hard as if there's ideas in here that are not bad storytelling ideas. If Luke ever goes off track, makes an egregious error, and thinks he's beyond redemption, to see his father get redemption from the most terrible thing in the world at the end of his life would matter. But Luke is a paragon of virtue
He's totally solved. His character is solved at the beginning.
Exactly.
Of the
film. So what is the point of that redemption unless he is
Because like
Vader?
His character is completely solved at the opening of the film.
Yeah.
Darth Vader doesn't do anything to show that he needs redemption. They just sort of talk about it like he needs redemption.
Right.
There's no actual conflict.
What I'm saying is that in theory, there's a storytelling version of this where Luke needs to see Vader's redemption. And through Luke's eyes, it can work.
Right.
But the movie doesn't do that.
But there's like neither one of these characters actually has that story.
Right.
Like, it's just not in the movie whatsoever. And he's not interested in telling it.
But what's amazing is, I mean, and by the way, I know that nobody cares, but we did wind up watching the slightly newer version, which does ultimately have Hayden Christensen in it. It has this appalling, you know, late 90s CGI Jabba's Palace dance sing-along sequence, this alternate Ewok finale. And so, but what we didn't see are the even more advanced additions to this film where Lucas continues to pour his soul into Vader. I mean, like the changes that we didn't watch in this version, which come in, I guess, the next cut, is Vader vocalizing his, you know, rebellion to the Emperor. Lucas's focal point has, I'm looking at the fucking box, which is Darth Vader on this on this DVD box. It's Darth Vader on the cover of the Star Wars trilogy. I don't I don't know what happened to this guy where he just suddenly decided, I'm flipping the script. I'm looking at this other character as my point of view.
No, well, what's really curious is that, like, the movies, you know, like, follow, like, the King Arthur story pretty, you know, pretty closely.
Yeah.
Up till this one, right? I mean, like, it's got, you know, it's got Guinevere, it's got, you know, Lancelot, it's got King Arthur, all this stuff.
Right, right.
And, like, and the King Arthur story is a redemption story. Like, that's what it is. And if he had followed through with it, he would have come to a true sense of redemption. But he doesn't want to do that because, like, you have to admit some sort of guilt. You have to admit that you've done something wrong in order to have redemption in the first place. Mm-hmm. And Vader doesn't do that. Like, he never, like if you're going to give Vader the redemption story, that's fine. But it's not like he is ever just like, well, you know, I am very sorry about everything that I've done. Like, he doesn't actually do that. He's just like, tell your sister you were right. See ya. And that's it. And that's literally it.
Yeah.
And it's so, like, no, it's no wonder that the movie can't even start. And that's why it starts five times. Where you are like, you go to Jabba's palace and you finish Jabba's palace. Okay. And then, oh, now they got a new Death Star. We have to go and attack that. And they go and then, like, in the most awkward, like, they're like, we have to attack this new Death Star. So we're going to send our pro players.
Holy shit.
Down to turn off the lights on this weird little station. And we're going to give Han Solo, we're going to give your ship to this other dude. And I mean, it's utterly confusing.
Imagine the plot of Rogue One with no planning.
I really believe we can blast through this just for the sake of context. Yeah. Right. So after they get Han Solo back. The end. Right. Then they decide, they go back to Rebel headquarters and they're like, okay, yeah, there is a new Death Star. We got some secret plans delivered to us by some randos.
A lot of Banthas gave their life for these plans.
The identical dialogue to the way they set up the Death Star destruction in the original film.
Right.
And then they're like, okay, we got to go turn off this shield. Then we can blow this thing up. It's going to be a piece of cake. They go out there. There's an extraordinarily arduous, boring story about how they finally get to the shield generator to turn it off. And you find out during all of this that the Emperor is like,
part of the plan.
That was my plan.
It's all part of the plan.
I fed them the information. All the shit you heard about people losing their lives. Nah, I just told them. I just told them how to do it.
And
why?
But wait. Let me say something about
unclear.
This is the only thing there's something in this core idea that is interesting, and I want to just push on it because I think there's something here that's cool that they don't do right. But if the idea is, here's the idea: one man is worth more than everyone else in the galaxy because he's that powerful and that necessary. And setting up a situation where I can get him here, and I can sacrifice my men and their men to get him to turn.
Right.
I think that's cool. I think it's a cool idea.
I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
All right. And the thing is, like, I think the core problem is that Lucas is uninterested in experiencing any of the emotions that go along with the story that he needs to tell.
I agree. But a neat idea. And, isn't that a cool idea?
True. So the story that you're talking about is the Luke Skywalker story we've been watching.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we've been set up. This is what we've been set up for, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even before we get to Return of the Jedi, just look at the first two, right? Like, this dude is, like, what is his key problem? What is Luke's key problem? Like, you know, like, in himself, like, he doesn't believe in himself. He thinks he's from a backwater, and he's never going to be worth anything. The first movie shows that he can, and then the second movie goes, or maybe not.
Yeah, power you're gonna fuck it up.
You're gonna fuck it up. Mm-hmm. So Darth Vader is set up in the entire friggin' movie. What we should do just for a second is talk about Empire Strikes Back.
This is a really hard podcast.
There's so many problems.
Because we're covering Return of the Jedi, but we're also covering the Star Wars phenomenon at the same time.
Okay, right. So like there's because the oh, God, it's like there's so many things that have
we
to
got
say.
Time, man. Take it. So, take it on. Take it on.
Okay. So if you're
a three-hour podcast.
If you simply look at Return of the Jedi, right, the Empire does nothing bad in it at all. Like, they don't blow up a planet. They don't hurt anybody. They do nothing. They sit there and wait for Luke to show up. And that's it. That's literally it. Nothing happens. Like, in the first one, they are instantly bad. They're killing everybody to just get the planet.
Blow up an entire planet.
They blow up a whole planet, you know, with Princess Leia's parents on it and all this shit. Like, you're like, oh my God, somebody stop them. This is terrible. They're going to go and blow up another planet. Like, in this...
That was just a test.
It's just like, in this one, it's not even clear what they're going to do with the new Death Star. They're just kind of building it, and they're not even going to blow up a planet with it.
They haven't even made a threat.
They're just kicking it. It's like hanging out. Hey, what's up? No, new Death Star, dude.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's cool. You know, like, and nobody says shit.
We have Darth some Vader good, kind plans for it.
Yeah, like, there's no, they have no story, they have no drive, they have no plot whatsoever. And they are confronted by a hero who has solved his internal conflict.
Great. Good place to start a movie.
So that, like, you have no film at all. Yeah. Whereas you compare that to Empire Strikes Back. Empire Strikes Back starts, like, first of all, it's a movie basically action-wise told in reverse. Like, the big, like, stellar space action scene is the snowspeeder fight in the beginning. It's unbelievable. You're like, oh my God, I've never seen anything like this. That, by the way, is the one, is like what is true about the first Star Wars and definitely true about Empire Strikes Back, is you've never seen anything like this before in both films. Mm. Like, you're like, that's not a callback. That's new. That's new. That thing's new. That's a new scene. That's a new character. That's a new emotion. This is really deep. Like, all the time, this is all fresh material. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, nothing in Return of the Jedi is fresh.
That, one of the things that blew me away most is, like, I know the criticism of Force Awakens is, oh, they just went back and remade Star Wars. They remade Return of the Jedi. Return of the Jedi is... In a really ludicrous and crazy way, a remake of Star Wars.
Yes.
A bad remake of Star Wars.
With no tension, no plot. Yeah. Nobody's doing anything.
Because they're telling you, like, you know this. You know this shit. Right. This is what you want. This is fucking Star Wars. You're here. You're paying your money. Yes. We're just going to give you goddamn Star Wars.
Yeah.
And, like, it's really... cynical. It's ugly.
I told Kaylin during the film, I said, in an infinite universe, I can't believe there's no other stories to do. Like, I can't, and this keeps coming up with Rogue One and with Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. I legitimately, on a deep, deep visceral level, cannot believe that in an infinite universe, you can't do other things.
There's a reason why they keep on going back to telling the Death Star story. There's a reason why they keep on going back and trying to tell this, like, kind of trying to tell a redemption story over and over. They did it with episodes 1-3. It was another half-assed redemption story.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's because Lucas never finished telling it in this series. Like, he just never didn't do it.
Now, is that... Now, giving him the greatest benefit of the doubt, which I don't really believe, but let's just, like, argue it for a minute. Does he see that, the unfinished redemption story, as the ticket to constant revenue? Like, that people will constantly come back.
Okay, so, like, if we cut them all the slack in the world, like, you know, there's definitely sections in my life when I've been depressed, you know, like, when bad shit's happened, whatever it is, and it lasts forever. And, like, the key thing about being depressed is not that you're super mad at everybody or that you're plotting to get revenge or that you're ultra, ultra sad. It's that you have no sense of feeling anything powerful at all.
Right.
Like, you're unable to figure out what you feel. And so you sleep a lot. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
And, like, this is a movie that's produced by that sensibility. Like, I cut them all the credit in the world. So, like, hey, man, like, I would, if I were in your fucking shoes, I would make the same gigantic mistake.
I know.
You know? And
is the unobjective melancholia. This is a deeply depressed film.
Yeah,
it really feels that way.
It's like in the middle of the movie, what was it? It was the fucking scene where, you know, he was just like, I'm your brother, and she's like, somehow I've always known. It's like, it's so terrible and so fake.
It's almost commedia dell'arte.
Yeah,
like, it's all. You know what I mean? It's like, it's almost just this, like, caricature of a thing. And you're like, I guess that's the way.
Yeah,
anyway, you know what? Like, you are nearly at a point of convincing me this is a work of art in the sense that it
purely accidental, but absolutely,
but it really does replicate or create the feeling of desperate, lonely,
yeah.
sadness,
yeah.
emptiness,
and also, artificiality, yeah. and ennui, and you're just
and
like,
what
oh,
a fucking
fuck,
amazing
man.
And an amazing reflection of Star Wars when somebody feels that the world is at their fucking fingertips and I can do anything. I mean, like, I love the stories of Lucas talking about American Graffiti and Star Wars right. and THX as these really exciting and enthralling challenges, right. you know, where he's like, somebody says to him, oh, Coppola says to him, you just made THX, bet you can't make a fucking comedy. And he's yeah. like, oh yeah, Coppola, Bam. I'll make American Graffiti.
Yeah.
And then someone's like, yeah, 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 well, yeah, I bet you've been denied the rights to Logan's Run. And he's
right.
like, oh yeah?
Yeah, screw
I'll make
it. Do
Star
it.
Wars.
Exactly.
And then something happened. I mean, I guess it's his divorce. I guess it's in some ways the financial success of Star Wars, where he suddenly gets shut the fuck down.
Yeah.
And this poor, poor genius
right.
who has so much creativity and life in him
right.
is suddenly rendered depressed.
Yeah.
And this movie feels it.
Think yeah. about how hard it is to take characters that you love and distance you that far from them. It's
oh,
not
yeah, it's,
easy to do.
Well, the thing is, I mean, like, I think that, like, there was,
well,
like,
and I'm sorry, Dan,
oh, go ahead.
Very, very quickly, oddly, what I do know about Lucas is his frustration with the experience of both Star Wars and then as a sort of duel to that Empire Strikes Back, where other people are taking his art and
right.
creating extraordinary things and yeah. new things. He felt a great deal of, I don't know, distance from that.
Yeah.
And it really upset him.
I mean, there's a profound sadness in this.
Yeah.
I mean, where he's just like he is having this like unconsciously cynical reaction to not only like his life is, you know, his life has been wrecked and now all of his, like everything that he created is being taken off and done mm-hmm. better. You know, everyone's perceiving this being done better
right.
by other people. So like there's a weird sort of like, you know, bitter, vengeful attitude towards this.
Yeah.
Like, well, this is what you want. Here you go. Whatever.
Yes.
I don't give a shit. It's not meaningful to me. You can't hurt me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Totally. Like, totally.
You know, and this is like that. Like, I don't know if you guys saw there's a documentary that came along with the episode one DVD.
The beginning, which is extraordinary.
It is like, it is so fantastically
yes.
sad.
Yes.
Like, this is
yes.
a sad, yes. sad, sad thing to watch where you're like, this is a broken dude who has created this thing that he doesn't even connect with or understand anymore.
Ooh.
Everybody is there to service him.
He feels an obligation to service it.
Yeah, exactly. And
oh.
it's just like, it's like you're just, you feel like this is like, you're, it's like dropping this little boy in the midst of a ton of responsibility and saying, don't fuck it up. We're all counting on you. And he's
yeah.
just like,
he's described
right.
Donald Trump.
Where he's
yeah.
his own parent
yeah.
and his own child.
Yeah.
Like he's really like, what's amazing. Listen to this. It's all George Lucas, man. But it's like, I really do, all of this said, and as much as I genuinely loathed the emotional experience of watching this movie tonight,
mm-hmm.
and have hated some of the experiences of watching his prequels, and hated The Force Awakens, so much of this series has been mostly negative for me. Like,
right.
the overwhelmingly negative, ultimately,
yeah.
in the
right.
end.
Right.
I really love and kind of care for this guy.
Oh, absolutely.
That's
I
so
feel,
strange.
I mean, I feel,
totally.
Because like, he's like, and all of this, I think it's good to talk about Lucas because it's not, this, from what I have in my head, like the podcast doesn't stay on Lucas because like it actually echoes out to what we are experiencing as nerd culture today.
Mm.
And like, we are living through the aftermath of this guy's, you know, personal traumas.
Yeah.
And that's the, like, it's affected us. I mean, just in the same way that, like, they keep on attempting to tell this redemption story. Like, there are things that have infected nerd culture, like consumerism and,
dude,
and nostalgia and
somehow
everything else.
This is all coming into focus for me, where the embracing of Return of the Jedi is the embracing of a false promise in some
yeah.
ways. Like, this is, like, people have decided to, and I mean, not everybody loves Return of the Jedi. I think of all the films, obviously, it's the least celebrated, but
everyone defends it.
Yeah.
They do
it,
defend
yeah.
it, which watching
they're
this now
desperate
feels
to defend it.
Really upsetting, actually, to watch it. Why did, this may be a really stupid question, but why did episode one, was it the time difference, that the time lapse that allowed episode one to be the subject of such vitriol and episode
how did
six,
people
isn't?
Not see Return of
That's
the Jedi
the
as
I'm
the
asking.
Nightmare?
Oh, yeah, it's hideous.
I mean, like, and because, why does episode one get all the vitriol? I mean, it's shitty too.
But look, like, I haven't seen episode one in at least as long as this movie.
Yeah, but like, why did this not get hammered?
Okay, I mean, like, to be fair, episode one is also a bad
totally
movie. But it is a brand new bad movie.
Which, like, I prefer to a Redux bad film. Yeah,
like, I mean, I definitely think that episodes one through three are better movies than Return of the Jedi. And wow. They're 100% bad. Like, there's no way to defend them, really, except that they are very, very bold new stuff in many ways.
Well, that's what I was about to ask you guys who have, I know you've seen them more recently than I have, but, and I've been actually kind of dying to rewatch the prequel trilogy.
Dan did all six.
Oh, man. But, like, are they as absent story? Like, are they as completely lacking?
No. They're not. There's too much story, and it's too abstract and not interesting to anybody. So
there's no character.
Exactly.
No character story.
Episodes four and five are emotionally driven narrative stories. Episodes one through three are political thrillers masked as emotional character development.
Yeah, so it's Lucas continuing to be mad. You know, like, he's now only now is mad about the Bush administration.
I'm gonna be political.
Yeah,
right.
and so that's coming through loud and clear.
Yeah.
But, like, his characters are dead. Like,
and also he intentionally neuters the mysticism. The midichlorians is a neutering of mysticism.
Yep,
and people don't really talk about it that way, but that's precisely what it is. It really is, like, reductionist. Anyway, listen, here's what happens in Return of the Jedi. So they go to the planet. They have to disable the shield generator that's protecting the new Death Star. The Emperor has put this in motion. Our story sort of bifurcates into two separate stories now, where Luke is now going to find his father and confront Darth Vader and the Emperor, and Han Solo and Leia are going to disable the shield generator.
Bifurcates, yet they all go to the same place.
It doesn't matter.
They haven't actually bifurcated.
Yeah, but they don't communicate. They've ostensibly separated into two separate sort of stories that are loosely connected by a very thin gossamer thread.
Right.
So then, through this ridiculous series of events I will not bother to bore you with, C-3PO, Leia, and Han Solo befriend a tribe of Ewoks. And then when the plot unfolds, and again, ways that don't need to be explained, but all these stormtroopers show up, and there's this massive battle between Ewoks and stormtroopers, and the Ewoks win via their cunning rocks and sticks.
But all this was actually part of the Emperor's plan.
Oh, absolutely.
The entire time.
Which, again, has a seed of a good idea.
I really mean it. Like, I don't want to get too far into the weeds of this dumb movie. Dumb as bricks movie. Painfully dumb movie. But what is the plan? Where does the Emperor's plan stop?
The plan is that he's going to turn Luke.
He's going to get Luke onto his.
I think is an okay idea.
Fine, well, but he says things like they will never disable the shield, and yet they just do.
Right. Yeah. So what you're feeling about it's a great story. Okay, the Emperor, like, that story was already in motion.
Yes.
With Vader.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Vader spends all of Empire Strikes Back trying to do exactly what you're describing.
Yes.
Right, and that's what Vader wants in Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. What does he want in this one?
Unclear.
Exactly. Like, he's sort of moping around, he spent fucking the entire last movie, like, he was just like, I'm going to kill everyone and everything to get my son.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm going to do.
Also, the idea of having to show a guy wearing a mask, have him demonstrate indecision, is hysterical, because what that manifests as is him looking back and forth.
Because
his face, he has no facial expressions.
Move your shoulders more, I can't tell what you're feeling.
Be more into it. Anyway.
But this is like, this is what it comes down to, is like, there is no plot, because there is no character.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, there's no, like, you can say what happens, but that's not a plot line. Plot line is, like, emotional touchstones.
I just expect that we're going to hammer on certain scenes and talk more about them. I just want the audience to have some perspective
on
what the events are.
Fair enough, I guess. I mean, I think most people have probably seen Return of the Jedi. And let me say this. Your vague memory of Return of the Jedi, that's about what you get. I remember talking to my friend. I was asking my friend, I think Matt Robison.
Hey, Matt Robison.
Who was in the room for our last show. I was like, hey, what happens in Return of the Jedi? And we were both like, huh, weird that I can't remember what happens in that movie. Mm. Now I see the movie, I'm like, well, that's no mystery.
It's not weird at
fucking
all.
Fucking nothing happens in this stupid movie. But like, feigning toward that, you know, there's all these scenes with these characters. Han is sort of like experiencing some uncertainty about his love for Leia, which just goes away. You know, there's this
uncertainty.
This
he thinks
stupid,
she might like someone
there's
else.
There's this
He's like, all
stupid
right,
romantic comedy convention about right. like mistaking her, you know, sibling love for Luke for real. It's just agonizing. All
it's
of which
Shakespearean.
I just
want to
move. I mean, forgive me for like leapfrogging some really, you know, boring conversation about how boring this movie is. Dan, what would you have done?
Well, this is why I wanted to get through
we definitely have to say the shattered nature of how we're talking about this is why people would rather just defend this movie. Like, because the...
Well, you know what's so amazing? And maybe this is a backwards way of introducing what I think you're... What I hope you're about to do is that when... I was at this bar that we discussed earlier, and Dan, you know, launched into this idea for an alternate Return of the Jedi. The two guys we were with had a violent anti-reaction.
Oh, they were, yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, it was really interesting because like they were both like they were defending it like, and this is probably saying it too hard, but it's like I was picking on their dad. Who was a dick? Like, yeah. It's just like, yeah, no, my dad don't like, but your dad kind of treats you like an ass. Don't say that about my dad.
Yeah, yeah. It was really personally angry. It was fascinating.
Yeah,
and
like,
I was really
they hate
like...
the idea that this movie is bad because they know it's bad. Like everybody knows it's bad. It's
but
bad.
And they were basically saying, but if the movie were what you're describing, it wouldn't be this movie.
Yeah, like the thing they kept like, on coming up. They both said, but that's not what happened.
Yeah,
yes, like, yes, I know. Yes. That's why we're having the conversation.
In their defense, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. That is in fact not what happened. Yeah,
so right. What did you say to upset them
like,
so?
Yeah, well, this is the... Because like, my love for... Like I said earlier on, it's just like... My love for Star Wars was huge. My love for Empire Strikes Back... Empire Strikes Back was a mind-opening experience for me when I was a kid. Because I'd never been so... not just attached to characters like I was in Star Wars, but... they used my love of those characters to expand my personal viewpoint in the next movie and to challenge things that were things that frightened me personally, you know, and make me grow as a human being. That's what this movie was about, you know, because the movie is an incredibly responsible film about growing up. And about the challenges of growing up. And in fact, the movie is so good that it retroactively makes Star Wars a little bit better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, it reframes Star Wars as the first step of a coming-of-age saga, right? Where it's great that he blows up the Death Star, but that's only the first thing.
I know. It's so brilliant because it baits you as, like, you could be a hero and it's kind of easy.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like, oh,
like,
but
oh,
wait.
Shit, it is not easy. Once things, like, now you're growing up and things are getting actually more complicated and you like girls now and all this other stuff. Because first off, we have to, like, say up front, Princess Leia never intended to be his sister ever.
Obviously. Correct.
Like, at all.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Otherwise you write... a different story.
Oh, absolutely.
And everyone understands that. Yeah.
Well, also watching Alec Guinness struggle to fill plot holes with a weird speech
so
that comes in
awkward.
Is fucking
it's so
great.
I mean, like, you can see it. Like, he's kind of tired even in Star Wars. He's like, I'll give it my B game. But in this, he's like, I just can't muster anything.
Yeah,
just get me out of here.
Awesome.
But like what Empire Strikes Back brings, it pays you off immediately. It's just like, you came in for Star Wars action? Here's some Star Wars action!
Right,
and you're like,
right,
yay!
Right.
Oh, shit!
Yeah.
And then, like, it turns the fact that, I mean, like, the big, tremendous hooray battle is them running away.
Yeah.
Like, and yeah, so, yeah, like, yeah, like yeah, yeah. So it's like, oh, yeah, we escaped, because if we stayed there, we'd be dead.
Yeah.
We're dead. Those motherfuckers are really, really, really going to kill us. We are outgunned 1,000%.
Yeah.
And the entire structure of the movie is, like, obviously Luke is in love with Leia.
Ren, in Star Wars. Luke is, you know, continues to be in love with Leia in this one, but he is instantly separated from her. Mm. Like he is like, wah! And then he spends the rest of the movie apart from her and apart from his best friend, Han Solo. And it becomes a two-track movie where...
His cooler best friend,
His Han cooler Solo. Best friend.
Well, and right. in the first two episodes, yes. And this one...
No, well, yeah, not at all. That's just right. like...
This
that's,
movie doesn't exist for that purpose. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Right. But I mean, like Han Solo, like, they changed each other's lives in Star Wars. I mean, I know that's a hokey way to say it, but it is true because Han Solo starts the movie with, you know, he kills Greedo because he's a scumbag. Yeah. Right, and he's like, I've never seen any force magical something, blah blah blah. Screw you, I'm drunk, and that's all he says. And then at the end of the movie, he all but gives air quotes to "May the Force be with you." Yeah, yeah. He's just like, "You're my buddy, and I like you, so I know you believe in this stuff, so whatever." Yeah. But it's a small amount of growth, right? And in that movie, like Jabba the Hutt comes up, right? And you can see that that's symbolic of Han's sort of guilt about being a scumbag. Like, it's in there. It's definitely in there, Empire Strikes Back, because he starts off like, I really want to romance this girl and do the right thing and be a good person, but I got this thing I gotta pay off, so I gotta go.
Yeah.
Mm. And he never really goes, because his heart is changing into something good. Like, he's losing his selfishness, and he's defending the love of his life, and he's... Oh, he's falling in love with Leia. They are falling in love. That's that track. Han is becoming a selfless hero during the entire course of Empire Strikes Back. And like, and every time he is like, every time he's given a challenge, he rises to it. Every time you like can like protect Leia, anytime he can do anything to save people, he does it. He has chances to get away, and he lets them pass by. Like, over and over again. And then in the end,
he's so beautifully almost there.
He's almost there. And then like that, and the line when she's like, "I love you," and she's just like, "I fucking love you," and she just says it. Mm. And he goes, "I know." Yeah. Like, it's the most perfect, selfishly spun, unselfish thing you could say. He's like, "I realized this. Like, I'm almost there.
Yeah,
I have become a hero." Mm. Like, that's the Han Solo story, is I am becoming a hero. And he becomes a good person through the entire course of that film. The counterpunctual story to that is Luke, who starts as the golden boy hero and then fails and fails and fails as an is impatient, jerky, fails more, fails and eats it. That's his whole story.
Mm.
And so it is the, like, as Han Solo is rising up, right, and serving as like a representation of how to be a hero, the demands are put on Luke to become a hero, and he fails, and he gives into self-consciousness. He has a dream at the tree when he's supposed to be being trained. He's like, and it reveals, like, in a literal way, like, what am I afraid of? I'm as bad as this dude.
Mm.
And at heart, I am this. I am not Han Solo. I am that. Mm. You know, that's what, like, Darth Vader is symbolic of Luke's self-doubt.
Sure.
Like, that's who he is as a character. It isn't, like... Yeah, like Darth Vader isn't his own personality. Darth Vader is an icon for Luke, and when he confronts his self doubt in the end of the film, he fails, like he utterly blows it, and like he gives into all of his worst feelings because he's not good enough to get the girl.
Yeah,
he's not good enough to pull any of this stuff off. All the hope and investment that the rebels have put in him is for nothing. And he is the opposite. He's in the opposite stage of what Han Solo's in.
And so Daniel has so beautifully presented, when presented in this way, when Yoda says, "No, there is another."
Yeah.
Who do you think he's talking about?
Who is he talking about?
Yeah.
Like, that's like, that is the, and Yoda's like instant about it. Like, he's just like, you know, Luke's like, "Listen, I'm going to get going." And he's like, "But you shouldn't." "No, I saw my friends are in pain." "Do you want them to let them die?" "Yes." "Stay and finish your training." "Take it easy." Flies away and immediately goes, "Fuck him."
Yeah.
We got somebody else. We have a real hero who we've been watching build up during the entire course of this film.
Yeah.
Because the purpose of watching that story is not because Han Solo is fun. It's because this is how to be a hero, Luke.
Mm-hmm.
This is it. You know, here's a dude who started from nothing
and he has risen up to the point where he almost recognizes pure selflessness. And he's gone from just like, may the force be with you or whatever, to like, I am part of this rebellion and I believe in this and I'm in love with this woman who you are also in love with.
Yeah.
Mm. Because like Leia is representative of, you know, of everything good and hopeful. Like mm-hmm. that she is a, like, if, like, first of all, I mean, you just have to, in Star Wars, she's one of the most feminist characters ever presented. They take a princess character and flip her around so she's the most, like, powerful person in mm-hmm. the movie.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
The only problem she has is she's in jail. Like, the moment she's, like, knocked out, like, the moment she's out of jail, she's like, give me a gun, I'm gonna fight everybody.
Yeah.
You go and do this, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And, like, so she's not just like, I just want to be with the beauty of, you know, the beauty of the princess. She represents everything actually good in the world.
Yeah.
Right? And that's where you want to be. That's who you want to be with. Both of these dudes want to be, Bob, Han and Luke both want to be with her. And that's because Han is symbolic of heroism and Luke is symbolic of self-doubt. The journey is mine. Like, that's my experience watching Empire Strikes Back.
Mm.
I react emotionally to both of these things
mm-hmm.
because I have felt like the fucking hero. I felt like I deserve Leia, and I felt like a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
And I felt like I've blown it, and that's Luke.
Mm.
That's why it's stirring. That's why it gets you. And the mythology of Star Wars, all of it is symbolic of those emotions. Like, the Force is self-confidence. Like, the greatest scene in Empire Strikes Back, one of the great scenes, anyway, is when Yoda's like, lift your ship out of the swamp. And Luke's like, I can't. And Yoda just goes, bam, yeah. Check that out. And what does Luke say? What does he say?
I don't remember.
He says, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Right? Yoda says, that's why you fail.
Uh-huh.
That's it. Like, that's what the Force is. That's why I was so offended in Force Awakens. But that's not how the Force works. Yeah, like, yeah. What the fuck? You don't even, you obviously know, no idea how the Force works. The Force is believing in yourself, the end. That's all it is. And the fact that Luke can't do it is his character problem. And that's why he's ruined at the end of the movie.
This sounds like a really good setup to a third film.
Yeah, exactly.
It sounds like you set up some great situation for a third.
It's also the series has told you what's going to happen. It's, yeah, which is like, Obi-Wan is in exile for yes, failure.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Obi-Wan is living
tells
in the desert.
Everything.
Like Obi-Wan is a guy who has blown it.
Yeah,
you know, he's living in the desert. He is exiled. You know, like everything is all. And Empire Strikes Back in particular is like lays it out and says like, just you know this. Just so you know, these are the stakes of the next film. You know, we're going to begin the movie. And Luke is fucked.
Yeah,
he is wrecked. He's like, and like, you know, he can put on a happy face if he wants, but he is ruined on the inside, you know. And like other, like Leia suspects it. Like this is like everything is terrible. And Darth Vader has got him. He has gone. He's pulled him down the dark path. In Empire Strikes Back, he's just like because Yoda says, you know, forever will if you once you do that once you just go to help your friends, like. Then forever will dominate your destiny. The dark path will dominate your destiny.
Yeah.
And Yoda's willing to sacrifice Han and Leia instantaneously for this because you don't recognize the good that you're going to do. But if you fail now, you're going to fail forever.
All right. With that said, what could Return of the Jedi have been?
So,
because this feels like a good setup.
It's a ready for like this movie.
It feels inevitable.
You've already pulled me out of the depths of this depression. Yeah.
Return of the Jedi. I would open it exactly the same way. Like, you know, it's just like it's Jabba's sail barge, whatever it is. You just get right into the business. Yeah. You don't spend 40 minutes there.
No,
sure.
Sure.
But like you like this is like Han is unable to outrun his own guilt. As good as he's become, he got caught in the end, right? And so now he is a prisoner of his, of that guilt, mm-hmm. right? Makes mm-hmm. sense symbolically. And Luke and Leia are going to rescue him, just like they are going to in the beginning of the shitty movie. And but when it happens, like they show up and they're going to do this, the moment that they show up, Boba Fett, who is there and who was in on the entire thing from Empire Strikes Back, gets on his phone and is like, doo, 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 doo. Yo, Darth Vader, just like you expected, your son's here trying to save his buddy because this is a giant trap to capture him, right? And Darth Vader's like, yeah, I'll be right there.
Mm-hmm. And then he flies the entire empire to come get him because he has said to the emperor, this dude is going to win the war for us. Yeah. Like, I will win him over. I will. You'll see. I know you don't believe me, but it's going to happen. As long as you let me go get my son, it's on. And so he shows up with everything he can and blows the fuck out of Jabba and everything. Then it's like a really, like, he just, like, Jabba becomes utterly insignificant.
Small-time loser.
Eradicated. Like, he's just blah, and everything is destroyed. And Boba Fett is there being a badass the way he should be, right? And Boba Fett is even like, you know, Han Solo is still messed up and maybe even blind. That sounds good. Like, from being in the carbonite. And Han Solo, or rather, Boba Fett has got him and Leia in his sights and he's going to kill them. Specifically, he's going to kill Leia, right? Leia's trying to fight him off to save Han, right? Because she loves him, right? And Luke sees that Boba Fett is going to kill Leia. And Luke, because he's down the dark path just that much and is so inflamed by the fact that the love of his life is going to be killed, he chokes Boba Fett to death.
Mm-hmm.
And Leia sees this, and that's it for her.
Uh-huh.
She's like,
scary.
I love you, but
you're dark.
This has now gone horribly wrong forever.
Yeah.
Han is blind.
Yeah, I've seen that shit before. Like, that's Vader's move.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
I know what he can do.
Like, this, that is the dark side of the Force.
Yeah.
Something has gone terribly wrong for you. And Han doesn't see it because he's blind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Han's still like, my buddy Luke, whatever. And Luke, because he kills Boba Fett, he saves those guys, and they get away.
Yeah.
But Vader captures Luke.
Mm-hmm.
And he then spends the, like, then that's the drama of that, of the movie, not the last 15 minutes.
Oh, this is good.
And he goes, listen, dude, I know things have been hard between us, but the fact is this, the Emperor is a bad motherfucker, and he knows that your friends, the rebels, and your girlfriend and your best friend are going to be coming here to try to kill him, and he's going to fucking kill them. He's going to wipe them out because that dude is so powerful, you have no idea at all. The only one who can even remotely fight him is you. That's it. This is why I've been trying to get you on my side, is if you want to save your friends, you have to kill this guy. I can't kill him. I'm not strong enough.
Mm.
My son is strong enough. And if you want to save the girl you love, that's who you got to get rid of. And so Luke's like, all right, I see where you're coming from. And this can all, we can rule the galaxy together as father and son, just like you said, but in a totally cool way. And so Luke goes and kills the Emperor. And the Emperor is not the Emperor from this movie, where he's like this weird Wicked Witch of the West impressionation. He's just like, ha, 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 all this shit. In the original Empire Strikes Back, you saw one hologram of him, and he sounded like evil Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
He was like, what is it about Skywalker? You know, he's like, holy fuck, that guy's got his shit together. This is bad news. So Luke shows up to do this dude in, and he is a weak old man. And it's sad and weird that Luke kills him.
Mm.
That Luke kills him because he loves Leia and he wants to protect her. And he kills the Emperor, and Darth Vader goes, that's what I was hoping for.
Yeah.
Because now I'm running the show.
Yeah.
And that's what I needed from you. I couldn't do it to that guy. You could. And now I'll show you what the dark side can do.
Yeah. And it kind of absolves me of this sort of atrocity of murdering the leader of the Empire, which is so fucking great.
Yeah, exactly.
So now you've set up a movie.
And so Han Solo, who is down just like, I'm going to save my buddy Luke, and I'm leading the rebellion, and this is great, leads the rebels, like Leia and him lead the rebels to attack.
Mm.
And Leia's like, be cool with Luke because he's a little weird. I don't trust him anymore. I love him, but I don't trust him. And I love you, and we're going to be married, and it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Right? He's like, absolutely. I'm totally going to marry you when I get back. Bye.
Yeah.
And then goes to save Luke. And When he gets there, Darth Vader is waiting for him. And Darth Vader fights Han Solo.
Great.
And Han Solo gets his ass kicked.
Yeah.
And Luke shows up just like he did in the first movie when he shows up and sees Obi-Wan Kenobi fight Darth Vader. Luke shows up and sees Han Solo get killed by Vader.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least mortally wounded. You know, yeah. He's on the way out. And Luke, same reaction, like, no, I can't believe I fucked it all up. Like, I lost the girl, my best friend, my father is like, he's the evil, and I've ruined everything because I didn't have belief in myself.
Mm.
Then Han Solo dying just a little bit. There's like lightsaber over near Luke or whatever it is. Han Solo is the one who uses the Force just this much.
Mm.
Like, just a touch. Because he never believed in it, and now he believes.
Ooh, lovely.
And in his dying move, he helps Luke, like not in a spectacular way, not in a bounce around way, but just enough of a push. Luke gets the lightsaber, and fights Vader, and he is so full of rage, and that he tears Vader apart, just totally destroys him, which wins the battle. And everyone is saved. Leia is saved. The rebellion is triumphant.
Yeah. There's all sorts of other shit going on during
all that other all the regular Star Warsy stuff.
Yeah.
But Luke is ruined, and he has lost the love of his life in terms of ever getting together with her. Like, he has failed himself as a Jedi in giving into rage. And everything is happy for everybody else, but his best friend is dead. The only hero in the whole series.
Mm.
The one he should have lived up to in the first place. Right? And Leia goes, I am going away to the Isle of Avalon. and we've already introduced Lando Calrissian as a wonderful manager. You know, he can run the rebellion. Like, now everything will be great for everybody. And Luke Skywalker walks off into the desert to be a weird old hobo, just like his actual father figure. And there's not a dry eye in the house.
Yeah. Great.
Because that's the King Arthur story.
Where's the Ewoks in your version? Just, I want to
we'll
know.
We still get them in there. Don't worry about it. But this is like
and
the...
then...
Okay, that's the opening. Anyway, now let's really start this. This triangular shot of Starship.
Isn't it so fucking awesome?
But like, that's like, that is
shouldn't
like,
that be...
Like, that is the kind of movie where if they had followed through from the emotional storyline of Empire Strikes Back, like, I would have given up on movies. I was just not like, that's the most...
They did it.
Like, they did it.
They finished movies.
They finished movies. Like, that's the most emotional thing that I could possibly expect from something. And if you had completed it, then we wouldn't have the situation we have now vis-a-vis nerddom and Star Wars.
You could have saved movies. Where were you?
Well, what's so amazing about what strikes me so hard about Dan's pitch here is that, you know, it's a closure, and that we are now in an era of open-endedness.
Yes.
And, you know, they've decided, you know, it's easy to call it like TV narrative or something where, you know, every episode promises the next episode.
Yep.
Every single thing is about the next move and the next time you'll get to come pay your money.
Mm-hmm.
And movies have embraced that idea as we never finished our story.
Right.
And that somehow has become the norm and almost its own satisfaction. People don't know what it would feel like to fucking
to actually complete something.
Yeah, we talked about this in Men in Black. It's adventures versus stories.
Right.
Right.
It's storytelling. Because, I mean, if you hear, like, you know, it's like I always say, like, if you heard my son try to, when he was like, say, 6 years old, try to relate the story of Star Wars, it would have been like, you know, first there was a Star Destroyer, and then the robots had the thing, and then they went down to the planet, and they met some robots, and they found some more robots, and they got captured, and then, and that's, and like that style of, the and-then style of storytelling, like, it's the least interesting way to tell a story.
Yeah.
And that's what they've chosen to make as the baseline for movie making today.
Totally. Yep. And as opposed to the idea that you will not believe the emotional sucker punch we have laying in wait for you when we finish you off and send you on your way to consider life.
Well, what's interesting about your pitch is that 50% of your pitch was based around what the character represented and what their journey was.
Yes.
And I guarantee you there's no version of Force Awakens or Rogue One where that is part of the pitch.
Yeah, the especially with Force Awakens. Like Force Awakens, everything, the only things I liked about Force Awakens were the actors playing the new characters.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like they don't have characters to play, right. But I like those actors a lot. I think they're all really good actors. John Boyega is totally awesome.
Totally.
Yeah.
You know, and if they get characters to play, that'd be wonderful. But they are as characters, they are fully formed, fully realized, unchallenged beings.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing to follow.
They're static. They're pure static. Yeah. And so that you could watch 100 movies with these people. I mean, Force Awakens opens up a story that will never end.
Yeah.
It will never end. It tells you right away, we're repeating what you know, and we are going to set up a scenario that will go forever.
Yeah.
And these people might hang out, they might go away, we might get some new characters in here. It's all just a fucking flat line.
Yeah, it's vaudeville. Here's more entertainment,
You can do that and still start your characters in a place where they need to grow and then have them grow.
I'm convinced that people actually don't want that.
I think you're right. Must be right. But what kind of market research is that based on?
Because things like Return of the Jedi are deeply successful movies.
See, that's the thing. That's exactly what I was about to say, is that Return of the Jedi tells you that this is successful. I mean, what's tragic about the Lucas psychoanalysis is that he did this... I don't know this, but I'm just imagining and projecting, is that he did this out of a sense of desperation, sadness, emptiness.
Right.
And he found extraordinary success.
Yep.
And to his tragedy and horror, right, is that this is going to self-perpetuate itself,
yep,
forever
in the
ever
most meaningless way.
Yeah.
In the most meaningless
way. And you're going to make fortunes, yeah, dude. You're going to make fucking fortunes.
Yep.
And you're going to get billions of dollars that you're going to give away because it's so much money.
Yep.
And it will never stop.
Because
and
that like, is really... like the tragedy of even Rogue One, right, is like I said before, like Rogue One is a pretty entertaining movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like I felt like there was enough character there for me to, I was just like, well, you know, it's there and like people get killed and there's a story here. Right. I like it. It's good. But even then, like it's trapped in the past. Like it's in amber.
Sure.
Totally.
Like you cannot, it has to happen in something that already happened. Otherwise it can't exist. If it's something new, it's got to be storyless.
Yeah. And the inevitability of it. And I mean, I will say that, you know, I don't know much, but about episode 8, what episode is it eight? Is that where we're at right now?
Coming up. Yeah.
7, 8.
The Rian Johnson.
What we're anticipating now is a sense of we're going to now complicate the factors of the dark and light side. And right, we're going to sort of swap those out and we're going to investigate what is the gray area.
Mm. Right.
Well, you know what? The fucking gray area is infinite. And that shit, while true perhaps, is terribly convenient for franchise filmmaking.
Yeah, and like
this, never stop telling stories. Yeah.
Because I mean, this is what soap operas are about. It's just like, totally, okay, eventually everybody sleeps with everybody else.
Yeah.
And
yes,
like this is like this is the problem.
Yes,
like
it's the Luke and Laura of the fucking Star
it's
Wars.
Gotta happen at
rape
some point.
Rape happens, but also you love him.
Yeah, whatever.
And, you know, and we you forgive here, anything. We do
this. And like I mean, yeah, like this, like there's a, it's like the way that most television works today is based around this basic idea that, and I think it's completely flawed, and I've heard so many people say it, which is that, oh, but what's so great about TV today is you get so much detail about the characters. And I'm just like, that's bad. Like, that's flat bad. Like, I know more about Al Pacino in Dog Day Afternoon as a person than I ever will know about, you know, whoever on The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Because, like, people on The Walking Dead are just like, I love you, I don't want to have sex with you, but now I don't want to anymore, and you're a zombie, I'm going to kill you, but I'm going to be nice to this guy, but now I'm not nice because I used to be good. And it just turns into vague,
well, you
gray
know what?
Nonsense.
This is an insane thing to bring up right now, but it's fresh in my mind, so it's an easy reference, is that I just went to go see Heat. They had a new screening of the 4K resolution Heat.
We can agree that this is a perfect movie?
In Westwood.
Yeah.
So
okay.
And by the way, it's way better than I even thought.
Yeah.
I went into this screening being like, for me, lower tier Michael Mann. And I came out of Heat being like, what the fuck am I talking about?
Yeah.
This movie is
it's
a masterpiece. Incredible piece of work. But that movie has the intelligence to, in 2.5 hours, 2, 3/4 hours, whatever, to run you through all the gray area soap opera dynamics and end you in a space of confusion.
Yeah.
You know, you have this beautiful finale to Heat where two complex characters, both of whom you're rooting for, mm-hmm. are end in reverse. You know, yep. there's literally, I think it's safe to say there's never a shot in Heat where you see Pacino and De Niro on screen.
There's no two shots.
But there's a hell of a lot of reverse shots
where
you see the back of one's head and the front of the other's.
Yep.
And it ends on that shot. They're holding hands and it concludes in this uncertain gray zone. If you made Heat the TV show, how much more could you possibly say?
Yeah, but there's nothing
you would
else
have
to say.
Nothing more to say. The movie's over in its uncertainty.
Yeah.
And here we have, you know, we're talking about Star Wars, which has now settled itself into a corporate mentality where we're going to make money off of that gray zone, where we're going to make money off of that constant switch and reversal.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that really depressing, which is, you know, to get us back to the concept of depression, this will never end.
Yeah. Well, you're trapped in that loop forever and ever and ever. Yeah,
Force Awakens signaled this at the beginning, which is you had a chance to have a character arc where you have a stormtrooper becoming a hero.
Oh, which is a wonderful idea.
Great idea, right?
Totally.
And what do they do in the first 8 seconds? He's a good guy. Right. He's rescuing women. He's trying to stick up.
We've talked about this so many times.
Yeah.
Is, you know, that, and I mean, now we're detouring onto a whole other thing that we won't go deep into, but Force Awakens compared to Mad Max, mm-hmm. Fury
oh,
Road,
God, man.
Right.
You have
Unreal.
The you
same
have literally the same character.
Yep.
You have Nux.
Yeah, Nux.
Yep.
Versus this the John Boyega character.
And like Nux is a heartbreakingly beautiful story.
Yes.
Oh, he's the emotional
but the character setup is
Unreal.
Identical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same.
Yep.
And you have one which just pisses it the fuck away in order to keep the story going in for infinite films.
Yeah, just for something to do.
Yeah.
Well, it's the emphasis.
And another thing closes that arc.
Although
that actually completes the arc.
Yeah, I was driving at what you were saying, Dan, is that when your emphasis is storytelling and character changing over time to represent something or to have an emotional journey, that's one type of storytelling versus plot-based storytelling.
Right.
And one is television and one is not.
It's pure, like, television is, like, I pick on television a lot.
Well,
my primary problem with television is that it is extremely clever and not emotionally engaging almost all the time.
Agreed.
Like it's pure novelty. Almost
well,
always.
It's what it's often, and I don't want to reduce all television to this, and I'll give a counterexample to this in a second. But the difference between what hijinks and mishaps can our characters get into is a different situation than who are these people and what are they up to and how are they changing?
And what are you, like, what are you saying?
Yeah.
Like, what are you saying
the
story?
Killen knows this. I've been in a deep Breaking Bad hole recently. I've been watching all these videos about analysis of Breaking Bad and stuff. But the idea that the reason Vince Gilligan came up with this was TV seems to have static characters and is mostly plot-based adventures. What if I did a show where the characters changed every episode?
Sure.
What if that was the idea, and how do we drive that? It's a very different thing. But to watch a film where, like as you pitch in episode 4 and 5, it's about character growth, change, metaphor, hero's journey. And episode 6, to see it abandon it so completely is really stunning, just to bring us back to
Star Wars. Yeah, and to get them back to square zero. I mean, they just moved to nowhere. They just moved to a middle that is non-existent.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right.
Where does Leia start? Where does Han start? And where does Luke start? And where do they end? It's, I would contend, identical.
Absolutely.
Or,
the movie pretends that they.
Or who cares?
The movie pretends that they've had zero growth, or that their growth ended at Empire Strikes Back, and here's the flatline success story.
Yeah.
You know, where they just make it to
victory lap.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing about TV that I was interested in saying, Dan and I have talked about this a little bit before, is that, like, Game of Thrones is a fascinating example. And it's a show that I ultimately checked out of. I have not watched that show in 2 or 3 years. Not really because it's a bad show, but because I got it. And the experiment and kind of, to me, joke of the show is, what if you took the Arthurian myth and medieval sort of, you know, mythic narrative, and you just never went anywhere? What if you rendered that realistic?
Right.
And nobody ever grew, and that people constantly re-upped their villainy or heroism and swapped it around, and it was reality.
And it just what went on.
You and know, it would just go forever.
Right.
And I'm like, well, that's boring. Yeah, like, I'm pretty boring. Done with
that. Like, because the thing that people get tricked up on with, say, Force Awakens or with Game of Thrones, for that matter, and all this stuff, is that, like, the production value on Force Awakens is sky high.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? I mean, it's just like, it couldn't look better. Well, it's just unbelievable.
What I would have never guessed, and honestly, I know this is silly considering this is 83 versus 2015 or whatever it was. This Return of the Jedi looks like garbage compared to Force Awakens. Or Force Awakens is a beautiful looking movie.
Or compared to Empire Strikes Back.
I mean, because Empire Strikes Back, I mean, like, it's. It's I think Peter Sushitsky shot. He shoots for Cronenberg all the time.
Mm.
Unbelievably beautiful, looks amazing, movie. Beautiful shot film. There's no reason, like, even if this were as ugly as it is, you know, Return of the Jedi, like, it could still be good. There are plenty of good movies that are ugly.
Yeah,
and like, I mean, for instance, you brought up Star Trek II, right? Uh-huh. Wrath of Khan. Wrath of Khan is obviously made for $16. It's a bad looking movie. Cheap, bad looking movie.
Yes.
It's astonishingly emotional.
Don't you remember the iconic moments of just a ship gradually rising into frame?
When he shows
up behind the.
Satisfying.
It's so gorgeous and exciting.
This movie is like because. And I can also, in some other episode, we'll talk about how much I love motion picture, but that's harder to define. But Wrath of Khan is undeniably one of the great screenplays I've ever seen.
I agree.
And it's so tightly written. Like, from the opening to the end, it is about Kirk's midlife crisis.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Like, that is the entire fucking thing. And every line is about that, because they know what they're trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately he realizes this is an opportunity for rebirth. I don't have to feel like a crappy old man, and I am reborn. Even though my friend has died, I can see life anew.
Mm-hmm.
The end. That's my statement. Mm-hmm. Like, 9 times when we were watching Return of the Jedi, I was like, what is this movie about?
Well, let me ask you this.
Incomprehensible.
Almost, I think probably as a way of wrapping up. Let me ask this.
Wait, just like the movie, I'm just getting started about what I want to say.
Really?
I'm kidding.
But when will it end?
Can we talk about what the plot was?
Let's talk about the film.
To what degree, and this is perfect because I'm ending where I said I wouldn't even venture, but to what degree did Lucas know what he was abandoning? Like, did he know what he was supposed to do and say, fuck it, I'm not doing it, I'm going a different way?
I don't think so.
It was just an emotional, abandonment?
This is my guess. I don't know. I don't think it reeks. It doesn't reek of punk sensibility. Fuck you, I'm doing what you want me to do. It reeks of laziness and confusion to me. It doesn't feel
laziness or depression or sadness.
Both. Yeah, but my point is not intentionality. It doesn't feel like a refutation, which is what I expected it to be, given our opening. It doesn't feel like an intentional refutation because it's too disjointed to be that.
Yeah, it's a mess.
Feels like a mess.
Yeah,
right.
Along that, and I don't want to spend too much time here because I know it's getting late, but I am very curious about Lawrence Kasdan's role here. I assume we're all decently fine fans of Lawrence Kasdan.
I'm gonna throw in, like, I think he's done some excellent work.
He's done,
like,
some shitty
Raiders, work. And he's done some shitty work.
Sure.
I really have to give, I really believe that the combination of Lee Brackett, Gary Kurtz, Marsha Lucas, and George Lucas made Star Wars what it was, and Empire Strikes Back what it was.
Got it. Fair.
Because I think that Kasdan is an astonishingly, like, clever writer.
Yeah.
But he never again figured out anything of the depth of Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. Well, two things about that very quickly. Marsha Lucas is credited on Return of the Jedi. She's credited in the editor section, I saw.
Right.
So obviously they hadn't completely collapsed yet, although perhaps she was cast out at some point. I have no idea.
Right.
And Kasdan, I would say, he is
co-writing credit with Lucas, Kasdan, and Lucas.
Yeah, yeah. Co-writing credit on
story
this
by
with,
Lucas.
With Kasdan and Lucas wrote the screenplay. But what I really reference when I think about Kasdan is his role in the Raiders story sessions, which is perhaps legendary. And comes if you and bit. I think I've said this before on the show, but if you've never read that fucking transcript of Spielberg, Lucas, and Kasdan in a room, it will tell you everything about who those men were in 1979.
Right.
Yeah. And Kasdan is quiet. He just takes it. And he sort of saw, you know, in this sort of very mild combat or conversation, he will sort of recognize Lucas as the arbiter mm-hmm. and say, like, okay, I'll do that. Mm-hmm. Okay, I got it. I'll do that. That's all he does. He just takes orders in a certain way. Right. And he's a very...
He's an extraordinary, skilled person. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yes, like his page to page is absolutely incredible.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Mm-hmm. And that's where he shines. That's what I mean. He comes up with brilliant lines. And he understands, like, characters that are well-established and stories that are well-established. He handles like a fucking pro. Mm-hmm.
But,
unbelievable.
Yes, mm-hmm. And I would say that the same way that Spielberg allows Crystal Skull to happen... Kasdan seems to have allowed Jedi to happen. Right. You know, they've just sort of gone down the well with Lucas.
Yeah.
There's nothing more interesting to me. There's really no figure as interesting to me as Lucas in the sense that he has the power to derail talent.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a genius who can derail the talented. Because
he was, like I was saying earlier, it's just like his, there are more talented people around him in his days, like Coppola, who's just like, you know, he's a better director.
Who right? seems to worship Lucas.
Right. Because Lucas is the passionate one.
Yeah.
Like, he's the one, like, in all the early stuff, like, he's the one with the real, I mean, even Apocalypse Now is that, like, that's Lucas's idea, right? Like, he's the one who's just, like, on fire for this stuff. He's not particularly good at it, but he's got the fucking stuff.
Yeah,
right?
You say purity. He's the pure one. He's
absolutely.
The one who fucking
everyone
knows.
Else is like technical master, like Walter Murch, or a directorial master, like Coppola in his prime, like he knew it better than anybody. But Lucas is the fucking little boy heart of pure love for this shit.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's what drove Star Wars. That's why the story of Star Wars is the story of Star Wars.
Yeah.
And that's also why it broke the way that it did.
Yeah.
And like what's really sort of like, I mean, like we've touched on it a couple of times, but it's just like Star Wars is the thing that changed, because I mean, when I was a kid, I remember being a nerd was bad.
Yeah.
You know, they made movies like Revenge of the Nerds because all the jocks beat you up. Totally true. That's the way it actually was. It seems weird now because being a nerd is like the most popular thing to be doing.
Yeah.
And that changed because of Star Wars. Like, literally because of Star Wars.
Yeah.
And because of the way Star Wars played out, and because of the apologies we had to make, because our intense love formed by Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back, and then suddenly we have to backpedal and apologize for Return of the Jedi in the most, like, hardcore, like, you know, religious apologia kind of way, that we've gotten stuck in that mode, and then big business, like Disney, sees that as a major opportunity, because Disney's business is nostalgia.
Yeah.
Like, this is what they do with this
anything
stuff.
Anything they can make money on.
Anything they can make. Yeah. Like, I mean, nostalgia has utterly... This is a podcast about nostalgia.
Yeah.
But it's utterly drowned filmmaking. Utterly drowned it. And, like, you can't get a big movie made that doesn't have something, like, mounted to it on the front end as a badge. And, like, and if you have that, then you have to do it exactly right. Because not only do studios demand it, but fans demand it. And fans have now come to the point where they demand that nothing change, that things are represented exactly as they were, and show me the old stuff, as if that's the payoff.
I know.
All of that leads back to this awful goddamn movie.
You're totally, it's fascinating, and you're totally right, and it's been such a long time, and I've said this in, admittedly, essentially a snotty way, but I am fucking dying for the day when the punk to disco, you know, corollary shows up and says, Star Wars is so embarrassing, guys.
Yeah.
Like, I can't wait for the generation. I don't know that it will ever come, but I keep expecting, like, if history has told us anything,
it's coming.
Someone's going to show up and go, like, what?
Yeah. Dude,
you,
I mean, like,
losers?
This is,
like,
the exciting
Star Wars?
Thing.
Yeah. And it won't be about nerds. Mm-hmm. It will be like, why have you sold the fuck out?
Yeah,
you
exactly.
dorks. Like, what, how have you given yourselves up for something pure and artistic, for something so calculated and and money grubbing
and unemotional and uninvolving and non meaningful
and consistently repetitive.
Yeah,
constantly recycling yourself.
Yeah, it's like all that stuff is like.
And I really get why it happened because these people were subjugated. They were sort of abused in certain ways. They were oppressed in sort of their own sort of sense of entertainment and the things that they liked. And now here they are, sort of celebrating a victory, and it's kind of soaking up a lot of people who didn't really have that experience necessarily, who are just looking for the traditional sense of like, I'll graft on to whatever is popular. Someone's going to show up and say like, stop. And I'm dying.
This is the best possible thing because like, you know, it's like we talk about like the, you know, the changeover between the 50s and the 60s in terms of filmmaking and stuff like this. Like that's when people were sick of the bullshit. Yeah. You know, that's when you had the people like Coppola and Lucas and all the, when you look at the late 60s, early 70s, the unbelievable breakthrough that comes through those guys that creates the new Star Wars is because they are sick to fucking death of the old shit. That's what we're headed for. So, I mean, like in a way, like I'm happy that all this stuff is this big tottering Jenga of nonsense. Like it's got to break. And when it breaks, it's going to be enormous and incredibly creative.
I hope you're both correct, but I do think the one thing, there's a roach in my house.
I see it.
Holy shit, you guys.
But I you may have been going here anyway, but ironically, what I would say is our sort of salvation. And perhaps this is even an invitation to those who adore Star Wars is, Lucas and Spielberg and that whole generation were adoring of the, let's say, 40s serials.
Yeah.
And, you know, the movies that sort
of... The Star Wars of its day. Star Wars. Yes, exactly.
So if anybody can just recalibrate their point of view, look at the original Star Wars, look at Empire Strikes Back, look at Indiana Jones, these movies that broke the mold in order to carve new ground.
Make it a call to arms.
Into mass entertainment.
This is what it's gotta be.
I mean, I'm not against rallying the public, for God's sake. Yeah. I think that's beautiful. I mean, Coppola did it with Godfather. Like, these great movies from the 70s, mid to late 70s, are the examples that I think we should be looking to, as opposed to these corporate owned, corporate purchased, you know, franchises, which are feeding back to us the most garbage tendency of our.
Yeah, because like I feel like I don't want to be like I'm the bitter old dude as I Star Wars isn't like it used to be and this is terrible and I just growl at stuff like this.
We are,
but But I mean, like the thing is that like Star Wars One, Star Wars Two were brand goddamn new.
Yeah.
And now what I complain most about in Star Wars First Force Awakens is that I already saw all that stuff. Yeah. Like, I want to see the new stuff. Give me the new thing.
Yeah.
And, like, the fact that Disney... I don't know what happened with Disney and Rogue One with all the reshoots they had to do.
Right.
But here's my suspicion, is that you had a number of nostalgia franchise pictures that came out that suddenly started on Ghostbusters, stuff like this that underperformed. Like, and they were like, maybe this isn't the way to go. Oh, no. And they turned Rogue One into something that it was more satisfying.
Yeah.
And that was like, you know, like, hey, let's have the ending we're going to have. Because like, this is what's going to sell now. Right. That is a hint that that's what people want. Like, they want closure. They want meaning.
Yeah.
And well, that's why this works.
This is what end the Star Wars trilogy right, 30, 40 years later.
This is what I was going to say is I do wonder if, because I do think that the audience for film in the 50s and 60s was a different audience than we're dealing with now that's been trained in a certain way. And I do think that if you're right about the fact that people on an instinctive emotional level need a certain type of storytelling, then I think we're in good shape.
Right.
If it's been trained out of them or if economics will trump this and that becomes a repetition, it's a harder cycle to break, you know, because money ultimately will speak in this realm.
I think there's always a place for vaudeville and there's always a place for TV. Like having the long, I don't have anything against the long running and then story, as long as that's one kind of story that gets told.
I agree. And listen, Mad Max Fury Road, the fact that it was a fiscal success to some degree is very promising to me and very inspiring. And I feel really, really hopeful about that. And also the fact, and this is meaningless, but the fact that the Academy recognized that film.
It is very
promising to me.
That movie really is the ultimate example of the best of both worlds. Yeah. It carries on a franchise and it closes up. fucking story. And it turns a franchise back into myth. You know, it's just like, you got to get a lesson out of this.
For myth, it works equally well on the metaphorical and the practical level. Stories it should do, but so few do. That one nails every step of that.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and then this, like, I could only hope for a Star Wars movie. Like, I hope that they get so desperate to make money with Star Wars that they make a movie as good as Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah. Well, like, just all it takes is 17 years in development.
And then we're all set. Done.
All right. I just want to say, in closing, two things I want to say, and we can all close, whatever. I think the Ewok costumes are fucking great.
Oh, there's one. I told you about it. I was like, that dude looks really scary.
Yeah, I was kind of wrong about that. The Ewoks look pretty cool, which I was surprised to see.
You're right. The Ewoks are by far the least of this movie's problems.
Ewoks
are fine.
Yeah, I'm shocked by them. They look great. I want to apologize to my girlfriend because if I sat through three films and I was with someone who it was important, I knew it was important that they liked it, and someone said to me at the end of this, did you like it? What did you like? I'd probably go, the Ewoks.
The Ewoks.
The
Ewoks are the winners,
because it's completely the right thing to say.
And also, they're the one new thing in the film.
Exactly.
Like, that's that, like, true. Like, that, you're just like, oh, thank God, the
little
Ewoks are back.
Are you kidding me?
It's awesome. Yeah. Let's do this.
At the time, I was like, ugh. And now I'm like, fucking much smarter answer than I had given it credit for. It's totally the right answer.
So true.
Absolutely.
God, can we say, I know I said this during the movie, and now I'm just recycling a joke for you guys, but like, did Chewbacca need to have Ryder Strong's hair?
That's a fucking best joke
for this finale, for this ending movie. Like, he's a bad Chewbacca.
It's really good.
He looks
really
like Boy Meets World.
Yeah.
Dan Thrawn, would you please, first of all, thank you.
Oh, thank you guys.
Like, beyond all belief.
That was very cathartic, I gotta tell you.
Great podcast.
So glad.
Do you want to pitch any? Do you want to plug anything? Do you want to?
Yeah, what do you want to say?
Follow you on Twitter or whatever?
Yeah, well, I know you already brought up the Planet of the Apes film, but I also made a zombie film that I would love you guys to check out called Spoiler. If you go to Vimeo or Google Vimeo, Spoiler Zombie Thrawn, Thron. Go ahead and say it. It's 17 minutes long. It's got a zombie in it. Can't be that bad.
It's so goddamn good. It is, you know, and in the way that, but honestly, in the way that you're sort of pre-dawn of the Apes movie is, it's kind of an evolution of the genre.
No,
it's a really, really a brilliant riff on something familiar. So please watch it. It's really great.
Let's see this bag.
Would you also choose for us?
All right, here we go.
Next week's film.
It really, I'm going to
get in there,
deep.
Yeah.
You pulled Police Academy. Fuck you.
No, here it is. Oh, I got it. Whatever it is.
Here we go. What are we watching next week on Does Your Favorite Movie Suck?
Okay.
Daniel Thrawn.
Oh, yeah. Die Hard with a Vengeance.
another third in the trilogy. I'm excited about it. It's our second McTiernan after Predator.
There you go.
Here we go. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next time on Does Your Favorite Movie Suck?